It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, and Alex Lindsay are here. We'll talk about the Spotify kerfuffle, Apple's trademark of Night Shift, and typewriters. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 514, recorded Tuesday, July 5th, 2016. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Adobe Marketing Cloud. Introducing Adobe White Papers for marketing. White Papers read aloud to keep you up to date with the latest trends and technologies. Listen today by searching Audio White Papers for Marketing on iTunes or visit adobe.com for more information. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com/MacBreak to get $5 off your first order. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get $50 off one of their Ring of Security kits, the bundle kit or the pro bundle kit with their limited time offer. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news, of which there is a dearth. But that will not stop us, my friends. No, onward into the fray with Mr. Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Happy 5th of July to all my fellow lower Canadians.
Speaking of Canadians, Renee Ritchie is here from Montreal. You celebrate on the 1st of July. Is that, come on, really an attempt to one-up us?
No, it's Confederation Day, Leo. And we still have a queen, and who is a separate legal entity from the British queen, yeah. We found out.
Yeah. What?
Queen of Canada is a completely separate legal entity from the Queen of England.
Has somebody informed Her Highness?
She is apparently a legal entity in 18 or so different countries she's the queen of.
Wow. And speaking of queens, it's Alex. No, that's wrong. That's wrong. Stop right there, Leo. Alex Lindsay's here. You may have seen him in kinky boots. He's now at the Pixel Corps. No, that's somebody else, at Alex Lindsay. Hello, Alex.
Hello, hello.
Nice to see you from his...
Good to see you as well.
...his soundproof lair somewhere in Marin County.
Yes, I was going to come up, but I hurt my leg and I'm having trouble driving.
Ow.
So
I'm sorry.
So But as soon as I can drive again, then I'll be good to go. Right now, I'm just Ubering to back and forth.
It is not, by the way, iBookery says, Federation Day. It's Confederation Day.
Confederation Day.
Federation Day will not be celebrated for a couple of centuries yet.
We no longer have the British North America Act. We have to wing it on this whole confederated thing.
You know, here in this country, confederation is not a good word.
Well, in your country, liberal doesn't seem to be a good thing either, Leo. And it's the far right-wing party
confusing.
In Quebec. So.
I know. So confusing.
The liberals are our right wing. I don't know.
So
we live
confusing.
In a different world.
Are you planning to exit from the EU?
We Brexited early, Leo. We Brexited like, I don't know. Quebec keeps trying to connect it, but that...
You want to connect it? That's right.
They had two referendums when I was a kid, and they lost by, I think, like 49 or 48%.
Close.
But I was so dumb as a child, I thought that it actually meant we would break off from the country and hopefully go someplace warmer like the Caribbean.
Float south.
I was really for it. I was like, yes, next to Jamaica, just park us there.
No more snow.
Oh, it would be such a great platform.
Yeah, but then you'd have to get a third queen.
No, she's queen of Jamaica, too. So
perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. It's all in the cards.
I like how this is coming together.
They're going to have to change so much money when Charles becomes king. My God.
Oh. Do they do that? Do they put the reigning monarch on? I know the queen
is
on
now. No, it's just on a couple. Like the queen was on the dollar bill, but we don't have a dollar bill anymore. And she's on the coins. So, I mean, we changed Laurier. I think Laurier is on the five, and people keep turning him into Spock. So we had to have the government ask people to stop.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that
Laurier
was good.
Into the spot. Yeah. We're a fun
now,
country.
Is this part of that same institutional cultural problem where you had two football teams called the Rough Riders in the same league? Okay.
Yes, we had seven teams, two of which were called the Rough Riders.
I'm not saying it indicates a problem. I'm saying that it indicates something unique and wonderful about the Canadian national character. That's all I'm saying.
They were two leagues that joined. Each league had a Rough Riders, and no one, it was like Sam Steele staring at you across the border. No one was willing to flinch.
I'm pleased to say that a Google search for Canadian Spock money actually delivers.
It's just delightful.
He really does have that look, doesn't he?
Please, citizens, don't do this at home.
Can you find, like, the? Was there? I hope there was an actual press conference in which the treasurer had to say, "Guy, come on, we worked hard.
Hey, please
on
stop
that
putting, please stop turning into Spock. Hoser, stop turning him into Spock."
The Bank of Canada feels that writing and markings on banknotes are inappropriate, as they are a symbol of our country and a source of national pride.
Now they're a source of international pride.
Yeah. Doesn't work with Alexander Hamilton.
With a little work, you can make almost anybody look like Spock.
Nor does it work on Abe Lincoln.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
Next, you're going to say it's disrespectful to turn George Washington into a mushroom.
Here in Scotland, it works.
Spockification. Is that an iOS 11 feature?
Spockification. Okay, and Neil deGrasse Tyson trying to get in on it as usual. He's such
he sensed that people were having fun somewhere, yes. And he instinctively had to find it and squash it.
I will be there.
If you say something, I'll take Neptune away from you as well.
Hey, speaking of which, congratulations! If you were watching our live stream right before the show, we showed the clip from the new screensavers on Saturday where we interviewed a space scientist who had made one of the instruments, the Jade instrument, on the a Jupiter probe. It did its when you say the Jupiter probe's insertion was successful, that
the South Park episode waiting.
Yeah, yeah. But that's exactly what happened yesterday, last night, actually.
NASA got drunk in their pickup truck in the middle of a field at midnight. Next thing
and
you
NASA's
know,
top with the Jupiter.
But it was a very
getting telemetry,
very challenging thing. A launch 5 years ago, they covered millions of miles and hit it within 20. And all the instruments apparently intact, and they'll be fired up in the next couple of days.
Amazing.
Yep. Pretty cool. First pictures, we think, beneath the cloud cover of Jupiter. Mm-hmm. And you can see that interview on.
Meanwhile, but wasn't there like a premature engine shutdown, like during injection, that like for about like 30 seconds, you see everybody in the room going, "Oh, holy mother of God," until like they got the telemetry back and it fired back up.
It's better than
and
a Bruce
it pierces
Willis
the clouds
movie.
And you see a shopping mall. Is that right?
Wouldn't that be funny? Let's see here. We're kind of jamming because there's not a lot of news. This is that time period in the life of Apple where there's just really not much to say in between.
All new betas today, Leo. It came out like 5 minutes before the show.
New betas today. New betas.
All the new betas.
Feels like that's every week.
They were, so I think it was supposed to, well, not supposed to be, but they usually do every 2 weeks, and last week was 2 weeks, so people got nervous this week and were just waiting and waiting, and then they finally unleashed the hounds.
I have to admit that I haven't installed a beta on an iOS tablet until this weekend. I mean, I installed a bunch of them, and it's so easy now. Like, it's become like, I think the last time it was like, you hook it up into your computer and you had to move the stuff over and do all the installations. And now it's just like, oh, I just download a little 8K registration and then just hit go.
They said the public betas would start this month for WatchOS 2 and iOS 10. Is that the case?
iOS 10 and macOS. They're not doing WatchOS.
They're not doing
watch
betas.
Beta.
Okay.
No. Public beta. Those are fiddlier installs and they're not really for everybody yet.
Have they started the public betas?
No, that should be soon-ish, okay. Like in the next couple weeks.
Is this the time we should warn people not to do it?
Yeah, I mean, like I'm on the betas because I have to be because I write about them, and I still, like, it's not anything I'd recommend anybody put on their normal phone. Just
course,
don't do it.
Josh Windisch, our resident Apple fanboy, like the day of WWDC, pushes WatchOS 2 and iOS 10 on his phone and his watch.
It's so tempting, Leo.
I know. Yeah. Well, he said he was very pleased with WatchOS 2. I don't think he's had a lot of problems with it.
Right. Yeah. My kids both have beta on their iPads.
What?
And
you
like,
put iOS 10 on your kids' iPads?
Leo.
Are you insane? So they're
using the only reason they have it there is because of the Playground, you know, Swift Playground.
Oh.
Which they are rocking.
Oh, you're kidding.
Like, they're 6 and 8 years old, and there's this competition. If one of them gets further ahead than the other one then comes over to me and starts like, hey, how do I do this? What is a function? It's like a function is kind of like a tool
now,
that you build.
Well, wait
like,
a minute. How old are these tools? Your kids are like 5 and 3.
6 and 8.
6 and 8. Okay, they're a little older than they used to be.
Yeah, no,
it does
so
happen out here. That's awfully young to be learning Swift.
They've still been alive for a few years, and I've been trying to develop iOS software.
Yeah, exactly.
No. They've got a solid. They've got a solid command of functions now. And,
that's amazing.
And understanding how that works and how like save, my daughter was like, oh, that saves so much time.
She's like, what?
She's doing all these steps, and then she's like, and then she built a function, and she was like, oh, okay. And then now every time she sees it, she goes, so how would I build a function for that? she's like 6 years old.
Magical.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I don't think it's really designed for the age group that it definitely is a lot more hands-on, which is for me, I love. Because it is, it's kind of father kid time to hang out. So we sit there and I, you know, explain to them what that stuff is and how it works, and we go through it.
What's recursion?
Yeah, so
we're so proud of our daughter. She's complaining about Apple developer guidelines on a college level.
So anyway, wow. It's I thought that when I first saw the graphics for it, I thought, oh, that would be a little corny, but they love it.
And how about you as an adult? Do you think it's something as an adult that you would be, I mean, that's what I'm kind of interested in playing.
Well, I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity there because, you know, if you look at some of the stuff that they showed, anybody can build a Swift Playground book. And so the stuff that is up there right now that the kids are playing with is pretty basic, but you can definitely build things that were much more complex. So one of the things that I've been playing around with is, like, if I want to build a book on how to integrate coding with, let's say, little bits or with, you know, doing some basic back and forths, you know, you can build something that gives people basically kind of a safe place to play where they don't have to write all the code.
So you could write your own workbook as difficult or as easy as you wish, and then offer it to people, and they can install it and download it or whatever. And exactly. Those are just documents.
Yeah, they're basically, it's a whole nother level of iBook kind of thing.
Oh, that's really intriguing.
So while this is great for kids right now, what they put out. You can imagine that you know, you can have lots of teachers building their building their own. I mean, I think that was one of the big successes of iBooks was not so much that the publishers jumped on it or that it became this revolution, but teachers used it all over the place and shared a lot of iBooks to do their own stuff because they were able to build it. And so having this back end where they can actually put that together, you can take whatever. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's made by companies that are specializing in it, and we're evaluating how deeply we want to get into doing stuff around this, around Swift Playground. But anybody can put those together. I mean, it's still a challenge. I mean, it's you got to figure out how you're going to say it and what you're going to expose and so on and so forth. But you can have parts of the code that are being activated by functions that you're giving the user and so on and so forth. And so those are, it's a pretty exciting platform. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think that getting into the kind of the Internet of Things stuff with Swift could be really interesting for a lot of the manufacturers too. So you can see how I can move a Sphero around or change the colors of my lights. And I don't have to learn how to code everything from the ground up to do that. And the interesting thing about Swift Playground is that it's got the entire code base in there. Like all of Swift is in there. If you call those things, it's got it all built in. So it's a pretty interesting platform. So anyway, that's why the kids and I have, and actually my wife has iOS 10 on their iPads.
What's the time frame? Does anybody know for Swift 3? Because that's a big change. Is this going to be Swift 3 when it comes out? Probably, right? Because that's
I think fall. So. Yeah, I think it's aimed for that.
Yeah. Because that is a huge, I mean, that's, it's not source compatible. I mean, it's a big change. So, okay. Is not Swift 3 now or is it, Alex? Do you know?
I do not know for sure. Yeah. But I can't imagine they would build something that's not getting released till the fall to not be compatible with the thing that's released in the fall. It's possible.
Swift 3 is expected to be released sometime in late 2016. So they're very, you know, cagey about this.
Yeah, and I think in the beginning, if you were learning
the basics are basic.
I think it's the basics are basics. Yeah, I think that, but it's
they're even cross language. Frankly, I mean, you know, if statements and loops and functions.
Yeah, and I think just that right now, it's just getting around the basic nomenclature. It's so funny how even my kids are getting used to the little brackets and the curly brackets versus the parentheses and where they got to put them and all of that stuff is. I think that and I. underestimated how important that was. I really felt like, oh, you should just make something very graphical, you know, more like Lightbot, but more. And that's why I think why my kids have done so well on it is because they played Lightbot for hours.
Lightbot's
so
really great, yeah.
So they, so to them, the first levels of all this code is just more Lightbot, you know, and so they completely understand how to do that.
Yeah.
So I really felt like it should stay graphical, but by seeing the code, it does help a lot for them to kind of understand what they're doing. So it's I think it's pretty cool.
And we've mentioned it before, but the Apple has open sourced Swift. There is a Linux implementation. There will be a kind of a more complete implementation with Swift 3, they say, be the first version of Swift on Linux to contain the complete
libraries.
And
Playgrounds were written in Swift.
So you'll be able to do that on Linux. And then IBM has really weird, speaking of Playgrounds, Swift Playground Online. I'm not sure what IBM's intention is with Swift, but you feel like they're up to something.
Well, and I think that the interesting thing here is with an open source platform and a very robust teaching mechanism, you could end up with, you know, that could be the next generation of coders. You know, I mean, it's going to be hard pressed for a school to find resources that are better than the Swift Playground platform to teach coding.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue, is it's going to be very difficult to find something that's competitive to that. There's a lot of things that people have been using, but they're not nearly as robust as what Swift Playground looks like so far.
This is the IBM Swift Sandbox, which is, you know, just kind of like a REPL for Swift, but it's online, which is wild. Swiftlang.ng.bluemix.net. But I think what's interesting is the idea that Swift may end up being more than just an Apple programming language. It's very clear Apple's all in on Swift, that all Apple development will be for all platforms will be Swift sooner than later, I think. And the people I talk to who use Swift really are high on it.
And I think Federighi said parts of Finder and parts of other core applications are already being rewritten partially in Swift or updated in Swift.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right. We got really the big story of the week, and almost the only story of the week is about Apple Music. So we'll talk about that in just a second, and then if you guys could find something else to talk about, that'd be great.
Anything.
I just, you know what I don't want, and I know what we will end up doing is doing the usual rumor mill tour, right, of the iPhones, next iPhone and the next MacBook.
It's clearly dark blue, Leo. No, it's black. No, royal blue.
Just like, come on, guys. I'm really holding my breath for a new MacBook Pro, though, I have to say. And
you'll get one.
I actually got to the point where, as I mentioned earlier, I went to the Apple store online and checked today. So, like, just in case. I mean, I think there would be a fairly large noise when that happens, but I just in case I missed that. But no.
No.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the organ donor app, which is actually very interesting, and we want to encourage everybody to do it. So I'm sure that's all three of his pick for the week. Our show today brought to you by Adobe Marketing Cloud. Now, if you're in business or you work in the marketing department or you're a marketing professional of a business, but also if you own a business, marketing is a complex and challenging thing. I think a lot of us, and I really include myself in this, are seat-of-the-pants marketers. Well, that seems like a good idea, but there's really a lot, and especially nowadays in the internet era, about marketing that is science. If you want to keep up to date on the latest marketing trends and technologies, you're going to love these white papers from Adobe, and they're audio white papers, which is really great. It makes it very easy for you to listen on your way to work to kind of be, keeping up to speed in your downtime. The series of audio podcasts includes topics like learning the difference between, and I confess not to knowing what I'm talking about here, interaction metrics, engagement metrics, and value metrics. I better listen to that one to help figure out what part of your creative is working. Seems like that would be important. Creating a personalized content that's relevant to customers using predictive analytics. You can tell I need to listen to this. Creating a 360-degree view of each customer, no matter where they're interacting with your brand, and a lot more. And what's nice is you don't have to read these. You can, but they've made them audio. In fact, they got really good readers, some of the best readers from Audible, in fact. So all you have to do is search audio white papers for marketing on iTunes. They're free, and you'll gain great insights into the latest marketing trends and maybe even be entertained. You can find out more at adobe.com or search. Yeah, right there. Listen to these white papers. Or just go to iTunes. I don't think that Malcolm McDowell is reading this current crop, but they have a lot of them. It's really good. Search iTunes, or you can even Google Adobe Audio White Papers for Marketing. You'll go right to that iTunes page. And we thank Adobe Marketing Cloud for their support. Appreciate them reaching out to our Mac Break Weekly audience. I think they think you guys are pretty valuable customers. Spotify says Apple's holding up our app. Apple says, well, you dopes, the rules have never changed. I don't know who's right on this one.
Everybody's wrong, Leo.
Okay.
Everybody can be wrong.
Everybody can be wrong. I do know that it's true that Apple is a direct competitor to Adobe. And so it's not unreasonable for, I mean, to Spotify.
Or to Spotify.
And Adobe. But to Spotify. They're frenemies with Adobe. I don't think you could say they're frenemies with Spotify. Every new Apple Music subscriber is probably one fewer Spotify subscriber, and vice versa. First of all, I think, you know, the first thing to get clear on is, what is the new Spotify app doing that Apple doesn't like?
It is directing people away from the App Store and towards a Spotify web presence in order to sign up for subscriptions, which is counter to Apple's.
Longstanding. Directing it, it turned off the ability to sign up within the app.
Well, what in the past they've done is charge you an extra $3. Because, of course, Apple takes 30%. So if you subscribe, as I do unaccountably, because I guess I'm a doofus, to Spotify through the Apple Store, you pay an extra $3.
Yeah, and their current app also does the redirection, which it shouldn't be doing. So, I mean, it's not...
Well, mean they actually redirect you, or they say, you know, it would be cheaper if you went to the...
They have a weird pop-up that says, for a premium experience, click here, and then it clicks you through to the website. Yeah.
But the current one was approved.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, there's been several tiers of this for a while. Like, it's been long rumored that Netflix, for example, has had the 15% rather than 30% levy for several years, and that other really big subscription-based companies have had deals that were lower than 30%. And that's coming to everyone. Some people are getting it now. Some people will be getting it in the fall. But subscriptions for everybody on the second year of recursion will be getting the 15%. So that's going to be going across the board. But some companies, we live in a world now where it's middlemen. You can't have multiple middlemen because everybody is trying to take 15 to 30% of the same pie. So if you own the music and you sell it directly, you don't lose any money. But if you sell it to Amazon, who then wants to sell it to Apple, who then wants to sell it to you, suddenly you have two middle companies and they both want 30%. And that 30% just doesn't exist for them. So that's when you get into these contentions about, and this only applies to digital goods. Physical goods, there's no charge on. Some people were confused about how Amazon retail apps, for example, work.
Bruce Sewell, Apple's general counsel, writes, we find to Spotify, and publicly, we find it troubling that you are asking for exemptions to the rules we apply to all developers and are publicly resorting to rumors and half-truths about our service.
Yeah.
What is the rumor and half-truth that Spotify's...
Spotify was making the case that they've been trying to play that because Spotify is a competing service, their app is being withheld or being treated as a second tier priority for the App Store. When really, as legitimate as any concerns were that Apple would use an App Store to exert control over the market, it's never been proven that they've actually done that. So
I do know when I am using Audible or Amazon Kindle on iOS, that I can't buy books in those apps. Yeah, I'm sent to the web.
Or Comixology. And there are whole dimensions to this discussion. Haven't you ever had an interaction with a cellular company or a cable company where they're charging you for the service or a service fee for having tickets emailed to you, but there's also a service fee for having tickets printed, and there's also a service fee for picking up tickets elsewhere. Or I'm going to give you a $40 service fee for switching your SIM for a new one that you need to get the service that you're paying for. There comes a time when you say, you are charging me because you feel as though you can. You're not giving me anything in return for this enormous amount of money in the case of the cut that Apple is taking from a lot of these online sales. I think there's just going to be even greater pushback when you have situations like, again, I make my purchases through Comixology. every Wednesday for my new comics, and I have to leave the app in order to do that because there is just not an extra 30% in Comixology's profit margin to give to Apple for the purpose of doing a simple credit card transaction, which pretty much they could get a much better deal on anywhere else.
So why doesn't Spotify just do that? Say, if you want to subscribe to Spotify, you can't do it in the app. You have to go to the web, just as the Kindle app does and the Comixology. Would that be okay?
Well, remember, the Comixology app doesn't send you anywhere else. All it can do is, if you want to do something within the app, is it will let you, excuse me, it will show you the catalog, and you can push a button to add it to your wish list or your pull list, and then go to Comix manually on your own, go to Comixology.com, and then see, oh, hey, there's my wish list all populated with these 8 comics that I've chosen, and then make the purchase. Spotify, I think that's they're trying to skirt around the rules of the developer rules that Apple's set up, but also they're trying to make things, oddly enough, easier for the user rather than just be silent as, now, I hope you're going to figure out that we also have a website and you can also buy things off of our website. They're trying to figure out a way. They're kind of testing the electric fence to look for weak spots that if we put a link here that people can tap and we word it in such a way that doesn't look like we're directing people away from the app to make a purchase, is that going to, can we sneak that through? And Apple has said, no, you're not going to sneak that through. We want our 15 pennies off of every dollar. We want our 30 pennies off of every dollar.
And a great number of Spotify customers do subscribe through iTunes. So this is not something that Spotify can walk away from either.
It's hard to say. I mean, for instance, I think you can make the argument that Apple gets a bigger benefit from Netflix's operation on iPads and on the Apple TV than Netflix gets from the bringing Apple customers to the service. And so the idea that Apple is taking even one penny from that transaction above what it costs to simply process a credit card is absurd. And I think that for a great many other services, you can make exactly the same sort of argument. There's so many places where, if you're a small developer and you don't have the resources to do your own marketing transactions yourself, I know a lot of developers who do think that 30% is, they wish it were less, of course, but that's a headache that's off of their hands, and they're actually kind of willing to spend 30 cents off of every dollar to not have to do just get an amount of money every month for their purchases. But so many of these other businesses, you just have to ask, how is Apple delivering 30 cents per dollar of service to Comixology? And I think that that's something that nobody has a really good answer
for. I think the argument is that it's kind of like saying, why should Macy's pay for space in the mall? You know, I mean,
a credit card company, Visa takes what, 5% of the transaction?
Probably less.
So it's Spotify is already paying that. Here's what, by the way, according to Jonathan Prince, who is the Spotify communications director, he said, this is the thing that bothers Apple. Premium feature. You discovered a premium feature. You must have a premium subscription to unlock it. Got it. Now, does that got it take you to Spotify on the web?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he says no offer, no purchase, no link to anywhere at all. I don't know. I can't tell because I don't have it on my...
There's so much to unpack here. And one of the things that's super interesting is, like, you can look and say, well, you know, Google was a tremendous benefit to Apple because people could access it and search the web. But Google was paying billions of dollars for access to Apple's customer base. And there's a feeling that access, because traditionally the iOS customer base has been the sort of a premium base, who are willing to pay a lot of things for services, that was valuable. Apple has given free apps, free access to App Store infrastructure for years, and that's partially subsidized by paid apps paying their fair share. And there was maybe a pessimistic belief that if you made subscriptions and in-app purchases free from iTunes, that almost every app would just move to subscriptions or in-app purchases that were outside the iTunes ecosystem, thereby, you know, radically reducing the amount of income that's coming into the App Store and making it run at a loss, which is something that Apple is just religiously unwilling to do. And also, when you look at things like like, you know, like Comixology, or you look at things like TV stations, the rights and monies that pass back and forth is much, is really complicated. And 15% in some ways is incredibly cheap, and 30% in some ways for some developers, especially early on. I mean, now they're starting to resent it, but in the early days, you look at blog posts by like Craig Hockenberry, and it's like only 30%. This is ridiculously great. I can't believe Apple is doing this. So depending on who you are, what your exact market is, and what business you're in, 15% could be incredibly cheap. And again, if you are, if you own the platform, it's like Apple, in Apple retail, Beats headphones are essentially free, but other companies have to give Apple a wholesale discount, which is not 15%, but 55%. And that's just how retail works. And you can't set up a boutique inside retail because then you're giving 55% of 55%. We've just come to a point in time when platforms are the gateway to all these services, and there's going to be a shaking out. And the last sort of thing I'll point out is that Spotify is in a horrible business. We've talked about this on the show before. There is almost no money to be made in streaming music. And it's going to be the companies like Apple and Google and Amazon that have ancillary businesses that they can use the streaming music service to add value that are going to really want to do them. Because, you know, for them, if it's break even, it doesn't matter. For Spotify, it's literally life and death. And I think that's why they're fighting so hard. But I don't think the business is going to exist for them either way.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, obviously they have a competitive issue. I mean, they cannot continue to compete with music. I mean, they do okay right now. They got ahead at the beginning, but they're not going to be able to continue to stay ahead as new users make decisions and as people start to look at it. I mean, you know, I think the big competitive advantage again for music is just simply that I hold down my little thing on my headphone and say what I want to hear and I hear it, you know, and that tie-in I think is probably more compelling than anything else that music has to offer, but it'll be enough for, you know, the kind of a constant erosion for them. The price point of course becomes another issue. So trying to find some way around that point where they have no room to give back, you know, but I think that it is. So, I mean, I get that where they're coming from there, but I do think that, you know, I think saying that Apple shouldn't have to pay anything for, or shouldn't have to charge, you know, anything for their platform. I mean, they are providing a platform and access to a group of people who consistently spend more money than anyone else anywhere else. You know, that you know, I think that saying that Apple shouldn't be allowed to take advantage of that or get some residual from that. You know, if you know, I think it gets into, if you don't like it, then don't put it on there. You know, so I mean, I guess I just don't understand. Like, if you don't like the percentage, then, you know, if you don't want to follow the rules, like, I get that they need to because they can't survive without that platform. But it seems like, you know, it's Apple built the house and can charge the rent that they charge.
I believe Apple pays for Beats on Android. Like, I believe Apple pays a percentage to Google Play for Apple Music on Android.
Sorry, say that again.
Apple pays.
Yeah.
If you subscribe to Apple Music through the Android store, you will obviously, Google will take its cut. We don't know what the cut is.
I think it's similar. I don't think there's a great variance across the industry. And of course, like, the big competitor to all these guys is YouTube, because it's almost unlimited free music, sometimes of dubious licensing
origins. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard because it's a bad business, but I want to see the competition at the same time. And it also seems like a little backhand and slap at Apple customers or iPhone users, because, I mean, in the course of events, you just wouldn't say anything. You would just have this service, and you'd say, you know, a premium is available elsewhere, or whatever. I don't know how you would do it, but I'm sure there's a way to do it within Apple's. But I think that they just figure, oh, you're an iPhone user. The only way you're going to be able to figure this out is if you do it through the app.
Yeah, it's a terribly bad model for customers, and the assumption is that you had a pre-existing subscription and you've just gone to download their client on iOS.
Right.
Therefore, it's not necessary to send you to the store. And if you are not a customer, then you discovered it through the iOS app, and that's what triggers Apple to believe that they deserve a cut. And again, terrible for customers, and not a very optimistic model. But it's difficult to Apple is it's one of those things where Apple's going to have to be hurt. And hurt badly in the market for them to want to. For right now, they believe the relationship goes in the direction of Apple. You know, they have this wonderful product, super successful. The App Store is successful beyond belief. When you start to become like Microsoft or BlackBerry, then you start to become incredibly friendly to developers and services because you really, really need them. But, you know, and Google can be friendly at some times and then just clone your business on other occasions. When you're a successful business, it's really hard for people who don't have a lot of money to throw around.
Well, there's a third party in this that we're kind of leaving out, which is the music industry. And I think the music industry this is going to be an interesting part of the equation. I mean, on the one hand, they have a definite interest in having competition to Apple iTunes and Apple Music, right? You want to have a vigorous ecosystem. Otherwise, Apple is too powerful.
Especially if Apple buys Tidal as one less.
Right. On the other hand, Apple, and part of the reason they probably are interested in Tidal, has because of Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre and Taylor Swift, has great relationships with the music industry, and particularly with artists, right? Artists love, I think it's safe to say, artists love Apple.
They're not very happy with Spotify due to the amount of money that they
right.
get for songs.
Well, I think they're not happy with anybody providing a free access to their music. I think that that is, and that's most likely something that will probably largely fade away.
So, you know, but the music industry will have something to say about this. What do you think? I guess actually it's the music industry would like this to continue. Artists would like it, loves Apple and said, that's fine. We'll just go through Apple, right? Is that fair? And what is the music industry going to do about this? Because they want to keep Spotify alive, and yet the same. I mean, they are artificially doing it.
I don't think that they do want to keep
Spotify. They don't want to keep a Spotify.
No, I think that they want some competition there, but I think that one of the things that they like is that, you know, Tidal provides an opportunity to get a higher margin if they continue to use that business model, especially if Apple bought them and decided to continue to use that business model. There's a higher margin there available for the artists.
So Spotify's just screwed, basically, no matter what happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I give them 3 to 5 years.
Does not that make you sad?
It was slack in the market. And a lot of businesses exist in the slack in the market. And when that slack goes away, it's just very hard for that business to continue.
There's no slack for Spotify.
No, I mean, like it gets pulled tight, Leo. And then, again, like you can have, it happened in smartphones. Companies, Microsoft can keep Windows Phone going as long as it wants because it has so much money from other sources. Palm and BlackBerry, not so much. They didn't have ancillary income to keep them going. That makes it very hard.
I think that Spotify had a time when they needed to be creative. They needed to figure out a way to really develop a brand that people were really attached to, find ways to do more with the artists, which they're attempting to now, but I think that's a little too late. I think there could have been ways to be creative about that, and I think that I don't think that they may not go away. They may get bought. They may, you know, so on and so forth, but I don't think that they will exist as an independent entity. You know, Microsoft, for instance, did really well and then failed at this area. So, you know, they could be another, you know, opportunity.
This is a last ditch attempt for Spotify to gain the attention of the Federal Trade Commission and
hope, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. And hope that they can, because basically they're shooting the moon at this point. They got nothing to lose. Is that how you feel? In other words, let's just see if we can get anybody to believe the fact that this
Michael
is anti-competitive.
Michael Gartenberg had a really good take last week where he said that when a company turns to the courts, they're usually not on the way up.
It's their last ditch. Yeah.
Yeah.
No?
There are plenty of counterexamples to that.
Well, and I think Spotify, there's some merit to what Spotify's saying, yes?
I think there is. I mean, I'm not a business analyst, so I can't say what Spotify could or should do to be around in the next 5 years without being relabeled, you know, Facebook Music. But that might even be a good fit for both companies. Facebook has been failing to get the deals they need to get. Spotify is just basically this big ball of legal papers that are valuable to have in one way or another, unless the entire music industry just hates Spotify and just wants it to die. But the thing, it's they have a valid point. I do think this is going to be a conversation that's going to continue to be had over the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. Again, it comes back to the point of what is Apple delivering for that 30 cents off of every dollar that they're charging? And yes, they could say, oh, well, we're delivering all these wonderful iPhone customers. But guess what? There is no other way to get an app on this phone other than to go through the Apple Store, the iTunes Store, which means that there's no way to get an app on this phone to those customers unless you give you let Apple let it speak. And I think that it should be able to participate in some of the profits that are being generated by the store, but it's going to become more and more of a hardship. But when the App Store began, there was one big loaf of bread that's being sliced into moderately very few pieces. And so there are a lot of opportunities for a lot of those early developers to be very, very happy. Now it's a situation in which you are either a gold mining farm that makes crap apps that just simply generates – money based on the ability to psychologically torment people who have a brain that's wired up to not be able to reject a bad deal when an offer is made to you at the time when your brain is most successful to it. But there are now thousands and thousands of people who just cannot make a dime off of it. And that 30 cents is really, really important. And it's, you can, again, they're very, very valuable customers. But when you're telling these people that there is no way you can possibly get your product, get your work of art, your work of creativity published unless you get approval, go through all these hoops, some of which seem onerous and unnecessary, and then also give them 30 cents off the top, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to – it's not going to kill the iPhone. It's not going to put Apple in any danger whatsoever, but it means that when some people have an idea for an app, they're going to start to see what are the alternatives. We will make an Apple, we'll make a version for iOS, but is there a better deal we can get elsewhere? We've already seen a lot of macOS developers already turn tail and run because they're just, it's not even the 30% cut. It's like you are wasting too much of our time with stuff that is not important to us, the developers, the developer of this app, or the customers of this app. We are making us do stuff that only makes macOS more important and more and more salient to Apple. Nothing for us or for our customers. And so, what happens when the day comes when Apple says we feel as though the macOS is not secure enough by allowing unsigned apps. So from now on, you can only install apps that are completely signed and can only be bought through the App Store. Think about the revolution that would happen then. You'd have a lot of people saying, okay, goodbye. We're not doing this anymore. Right. This is not worth it for 8% of the desktop market worldwide. And as the iPhone's market share continues to not necessarily drop, but not grow at the same rate as the Android installed user base grows, there might be a time when a lot of people are saying, we will, of course, we cannot be credible unless we're doing versions for iOS as well as any other platform we're doing, but we are going to put most of our effort in the one where we can actually make the most money, and that might not necessarily always be iOS. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it might not always be, but it'll be that way for the next 10 years.
I think we're far from that point, obviously.
I mean, the thing is, right, is that it's not just the number of users, it's the quality of the purchase, you know, and I think that that is the thing that Android still has a lot of trouble with, you know, and I think that's the hard part.
When you compare apples to apples, that gap is a lot narrower than it looks. Oftentimes, when you look at the broader number, you're also looking at phones that are blister pack phones that are sold for to be used for like 6 months. You're talking about limited feature phones that are being sold in developing that markets that are relatively new to the smartphone market. You're not necessarily talking about the same person, the same sort of consumer that's buying iPhones. I guess if I'm going to be honest, I wish that Apple had a really good answer for why 30 cents off of every dollar. I wish it were something better than because your only alternative is to not sell.
What makes us think that's a high number? So like again, when we talk to people in the past and no one really mentions it now, but is it a high number based on what metrics? Because there are people who sell through stores, but selling through stores has all sorts of awareness. There's a complete package from transaction to delivery to marketing to featuring that's provided for that 30%. And I'm not sure, like, I think the assumption is these days that it's a high number, but I'm not sure everyone, especially those who remember selling software prior to the, because it's easy after the App Store to say, oh, this is a lot of money. But if you remember selling before the App Store, again, the initial wave of developers wasn't like, this is a lot of money. This is, oh my God, I can't believe they're all doing this for 30%. So I'm interested in, you know, what, if anything, has changed since
someone who's I think there are limits to what Apple's actually providing. I can't name the number of times where I have had the actual name of an app that I wanted to buy and download, but could not find it in the App Store. That's anti-marketing.
Yeah.
You know, you're great if you're one of the top selling apps. You're great if you're an editor's choice app. You're great if you won an annual award, but it's not helping you squat for actually marketing your app. It's still your responsibility.
It does don't depend very much on what the market is and what the app is or whatever.
Google's is still the same, right? Google is still 30%.
30% is reasonable in some cases and not, and it's clearly not whether it's reasonable or not, it's not viable for Spotify. So, you know, that's, it's a blanket number. Apple just pulled out of the air. Well, it sounded good at the time, and I'm sure it is still for a lot of developers.
It looks like Google's still using it. So, I mean, it's not just
Apple. They looked at Apple, and they said, what is Apple charging? Yeah. Oh, we'll do the same.
But I think we underestimate, as someone who's developed software, I think we underestimate the cost of a sale, and I think we also underestimate the cost of
DRM. That's what I'm saying. I think for some software developers, it makes a lot of sense.
But if we gave a big business, people who already have it established, a much lower rate, then you'd have all these little developers going, getting screwed.
I agree.
Is it for me, than it is. I'd be upset. I'd be like,
well, it's going to 15% for subscriptions.
That'd be the issue.
Yeah, and I think that's Apple's response to this issue. I'm sure that that's not sufficient for Spotify, particularly since it doesn't kick in until after a year of subscription. The first year of a new customer is still going to cost you 30%. If I were Spotify's CEO, at this point, I would be doing everything I could to curry favor with the music industry. I would get rid of the free tier or whatever it is I needed to do, because your success or failure at this point is going to depend on how much the music industry goes to the bat.
Or Mark Zuckerberg, like Andy suggested.
Well, I do like that idea. I'm sure he's considering that as well.
Highly viable
idea. That's probably the only reasonable exit you can see.
I think Spotify is way too valuable for anybody for it not to exist 5 years from now. Again, it might be rebranded by then. The executives and the engineers might have already moved on after being an incompatible fit for whoever buys them, or the executives who run the company may be now a CEO, co-CEO of the company. But it's too valuable to not exist anymore.
Yeah. And the music industry, like most content providers, Facebook might say, it's free when you have your Facebook account or with this. And the danger for them is that, like authors, they don't want their work to be seen as zero value, even if you are, quote unquote, paying with data or paying with attention. They want money to exist alongside with what they're producing, because in their minds, that represents the value, long-term value of what they're creating.
Yeah, but the music industry is in a lot of the same trouble that, for instance, the news industry is in that it's, you can basically see, you can say, you know what, I insist that my work is more valuable than free, and I refuse to put my music on a streaming service and give it away for free because blah blah blah. Well, that's nice, and by all means, you're responsible for your own choices, and no one should complain that you're behind the times or anything. That's your choice to make, but you're not fighting people who are being mean and unfair. You are fighting a generation that does not associate itself with, I'm going to give you $9.99 and you're going to give me 12 tracks that I will then keep and own forever. This is a generation that thinks of music as a very fluid and fungible sort of item that only exists in terms of a monthly access. So the thing is, because I'm an old fogey, the better analogy just for this purpose is that buying music that is not available online, I have to freaking love a band or love an album in order to buy a CD. And if that band decides this is not going to be available through iTunes, it's not going to be available as Amazon MP3, you only have to buy, a physical CD. Oh boy, it's not that I'm not going to protest and say, I'm going to stick it to you by not actually buying this. I'm going to say, okay, well,
How much did Sam Goody take of the face value of a CD? Must have been around 50%. Well,
it wasn't contract, the printing, the press.
How much was it, Alex? You worked in a record store.
Yeah, so $16. The one stop would get it for $9.99 or something like that.
So it's still roughly a third.
So if you were, and so this gets into the little one versus. So if you were a direct retailer, you would buy it at that. So if you were Sam Goody or Camelot or National Record Mart or whatever, you would get it at that price. But at the one stop, but all the little guys had to buy it from the one stop, and then they would get it for that, and then they'd have to, they would get it for $2 more than that, and so they would get a lower,
if you're the record company, you're still only getting 60% or of the face value of the CD, right?
But it was more. I mean, it was a big number, and we
was it even, more than 70%? It wasn't more than 70%.
No, I mean, it wasn't not percentage wise. It was just an absurd amount of money.
But it was a lot of money, right?
While they got a certain percentage of the retail, you have to remember that the cost of a production of a CD when I was doing it in early 90s was 44 cents.
But I think that's when Apple said 30%. That seemed like a good thing, or not an unreasonable thing based
I don't think 30% is unreasonable. Yeah. For what they, I think that's the problem is that. all the other distribution methods generally are more expensive than that.
Precisely.
Wholesale is 55. I still remember when I was writing actual physical books and they would say 55% inside, you just go, because you, you know how little you got, like maybe 7 to 10%
of the 55.
I just wanted my signing bonus to be a certain, like whatever that was. I wanted, like, that's, I can be happy with that number because I may never see another dollar.
Yeah. So there's always a middleman and they always take a cut, and Apple's cut is not unreasonable. The real problem is that Spotify's business model sucks. That's the real problem.
Multiple middlemen is not sustainable anymore.
Right. That's the fundamental issue, and that's not going to go away anytime soon.
Well, and I still think that we're going to see, whether it's Tidal or whether it's Apple, I think that the move that needs to be made at some point, I think everyone's afraid to make it because of the ripples it'll make, but cutting the music industry out of the middle of that, I think, is probably the next step. I mean, for someone like Apple, and that's why, you know, with the talent base that Apple picked up with Beats, it wouldn't be very hard for them to move into being
the... Did you see that Rolling Stone article, Alex?
I did not.
Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. So the Rolling Stone was talking about how Apple's been secretly, quote unquote, funding videos by Drake. Tim Cook had input into the MIA's video, and I still would love to hear
Conversation. What could Tim Cook tell MIA?
I think you got to do the Roger Rabbit in that part, not the Cabbage Patch. This is Tim. I mean, like, they have been funding and getting in deeply involved.
That's my point exactly. So that's the strategy, right? Just suck up to the artists. And by the way, the artists are more important than the music industry because the artists will ultimately drive this, not Capitol Records. So suck up to the artists, make them happy. And I mean, if you make the music industry happy too, that's not so bad. But those connections are... Is that why they want to buy Tidal? And by the way, that's a rumor. Did Apple even confirm that? I think that they didn't say anything.
No, but, absolutely not.
But it would kind of make sense. It's not a lot of subscribers. You don't buy it for the subs, do you? And by the way, if you buy Tidal, you don't get the deals either, right? Because Prince's deal, for instance, with Tidal is with Tidal and doesn't get transferred to a new owner. Those are all renegotiated.
Probably
typically.
Depends on the different contracts.
Typically, yeah.
Also,
Rolling Stone is all about Larry Jackson, who is one of people. He's in charge of Apple's original music content, and he was talking about Tim Cook contributing to MIA's Borders video.
That's hysterical.
And Drake's Hotline Bling video, Taylor Swift's tour movie, and The Weeknd's Can't Feel My Face. Those were all funded by Apple.
Well, there you go. Right.
I mean, the thing is that for Apple, it would be almost a rounding error to completely compete head to head with every record company there if they wanted to. Like, if they just wanted to say, hey, let's sign Taylor Swift, let's sign, you know, because a lot of these, the more established ones like Taylor Swift have their own publishing company at this point. They're not, you know, the music industry is more of a distribution method for them. And the question is,
of a future as a distribution business is there?
Right. Well, when you look at a Katy Perry who's got 90 million followers, what does she need from her record company?
Right.
Nothing.
Nothing.
You know, like, you know, if you know, and that's the, you know, she could tweet, you know, that she's got a new album and she'll sell a million, you know, mm-hmm. you know, and on Apple Music, she'll just get a lot of downloads. Right.
Well, and Beyonce and all the big stars today.
Right.
And that's why if you're Apple, you go to Drake direct, you go to The Weeknd.
And I think that part of it is this embrace of having them get that there could be a better side as they negotiate the next deal with the record companies.
Sure.
Because a lot of them are caught in these 3 or 5 year
talk about bad business models. The record company is not exactly a great business model either.
Right.
I mean, historically, they own so much, though.
Right.
Yeah.
They got the catalog.
We have the story from last year about how Weird Al Yankovic finally, after what, 17 years, is now has now completed the terms of his original album contract.
You're kidding.
Well, yeah,
is he doing his contractual obligation album now?
No, he's done. He's free, and now he's that's 2014, 15, 16.
That's amazing.
He's basically saying that he may not necessarily be releasing albums anymore. That it may make more sense for him to release individual tracks.
Sure.
The whole business is completely different. The question is not like the question is now, what can Apple give to Taylor Swift that would not be greater than what Taylor Swift would bring to Apple? And there's a question about how much of that deal would be great. You're going to give me X options on Apple stock over the next 5 years. My appearance is going to be limited to X. Your window of exclusivity is going to be Y. new, what I'm thinking, what gets me most curious are new artists who are coming up who aren't growing up with necessarily the old style fantasies of I'm going to be the Rolling Stones. I'm going to be making $100 million a year off of my records and off my tours. These are people who basically are thinking about I'm going to have my own music business called myband.com. And if we can make a good living wage and enough to put some money into a 401k, that will be my definition of success. And these people are going to think, well, they wouldn't necessarily not want to do a deal with Apple or with Google Music or with Amazon, but they would be like, let me take a look at other ways that I can distribute this that will actually work towards my business model. Because I think that most of these people who are growing up who want to make a business of publishing music and touring, they're not thinking in terms of the way the music business was through the 1960s to the 1990s.
There's a great quote from a music manager who says, it's just a partnership to do cool stuff. It's almost like getting paid to wake up and eat breakfast. You're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Boy, it makes the Beats acquisition look like a good thing in terms of the long-term strategy of this, right? Now it kind of starts to make sense. You got to kind of failing music service and a headphone business you didn't want, but what you got was Jimmy Iovine and relationships with the music industry and a long-term play that makes you the incumbent in the music business, right? Makes you the big boy.
It's like platform exclusives in the early days of console gaming.
Well, and I think that the other thing is, Apple has a lot to gain by they can do things that wouldn't make sense for the record industry. So, for instance, Apple growing their installed base from the 15 million or whatever the number is right now to 100 million is worth a lot of money to Apple. So exclusives can theoretically be worth a lot. You know, so signing, let's say, a Taylor Swift and saying, here's the deal, we'll pay you $15 million for the exclusive for a year for your album or whatever, plus all the sales that you would normally get. You know, this is a signing.
Apple is no longer, one of the things, we were talking about this on Sunday, I think, that Apple is not, used to be it was a hardware business. It's not a hardware business anymore.
Absolutely
and,
not.
And so this is all part of a transition for Apple into
a hybrid product business.
Yeah, content being a content business, being a cloud services business, very different.
I just hope they don't move to the old saying about Hollywood is that they don't make movies, they make deals.
Right.
It's an investment.
But if you think about it, the hardware business fueled all of this, obviously. But until recently, the whole point was all of these synergies help sell hardware. We kept saying that it's all about selling more iPhones. But I think that we've come to the time now in Apple's life cycle where it isn't anymore about
it's
that.
Revenue per customer, isn't that interesting?
Right. But I think I think we're looking at the transition, and I think if Apple manages that transition well, because they're still making an enormous amount of money on the hardware, probably considerably more than what they're making on the software, but or the services. But that won't always be the case. I think there's a lot more upside for that. I think the one thing Apple does have to be careful of is actually going down this path too quickly. I think, sometimes you think, they could just, because they really could just put $10 billion into something and just push it down the path. But one of the big advantages, for instance, one of the things that undermines Spotify's ability to claim any kind of antitrust is that Apple doesn't have the majority, have a controlling
stake. It's a very
competitive
environment. Yep.
And that really undermines all the arguments around antitrust. People can say, well, the iPhone is different, but it's still, it's a phone, and it's a minority phone. And I think that Apple, I think the one thing
Apple's probably very careful to walk that line, aren't they?
Yeah. And I think that, that if they move to 100 million users, let's say, with Apple Music, and the next closest thing was 10 million, Apple would have all kinds of antitrust issues that they'd have to deal with.
But they don't.
And also, what seems like what seems to a layman as antitrust is just simply the facts of life of a successful company entering your business.
Right.
I mean, I was really sad, as a lot of people were last week, to learn that TechServe in New York, this legendary independent Apple store and service bay, is closing. And it's not because of Apple is an antitrust corporation. It's that they have Apple stores and they're basically sucking every customer away from any independent repair outlet or any retail outlet. Not necessarily because not because they're mean and they're unfair, but because they decided that it's very valuable for the company to not only be providing that part of the customer experience, but also to capture customer data in the form of they can actually take a look at almost every iPhone that breaks, almost every MacBook that breaks, and use that to inform the design of new hardware. And they really believe that's going to be part of the beautiful experience, that beautiful package that they deliver to their customers. And if TechServe goes away, the fact that TechServe had to go away, it's not antitrust. That's just unfortunate facts of life in the business world.
Although, and by the way, TechServe was a sponsor, and I too am saddened by it. I think it's a good thing for the ecosystem to have these third party.
TechServe was in its way even more fun to be at than any Apple store.
Yeah. Well, I think of my friend Tom Santos.
You can't get a cold bottle of Coke at an Apple store.
I think of my friend Tom Santos, who ran Mac Adam in San Francisco, which was a great Apple VAR and independent Apple store, and that was where I would go to buy my Mac Cube, for instance.
Yep. Town of Nashua, New Hampshire. It was the tradition in every household in Massachusetts that you would drive about an hour to Nashua, tax free New Hampshire. You would make enough money. You would save enough money on state sales tax to pay for gas and have a really nice dinner once you get there. And so that's why
always complained, and I think a lot of the VARs did complain that Apple would not. They would play some games and like not getting them the latest stuff right away, undercutting them a little bit in other ways. And of course, once the Apple stores gained steam, it was hopeless for these guys. And well, I think losing Spotify would be a loss for us as end users. I think losing those independent resellers is a loss for us as end users. And I don't think Apple's being mean about it, but I do think it's a shame.
It's a shame, right? Exactly. Go ahead.
You have to see where you fit into an ecosystem, you know, where you are, you know, and I think that a value-added reseller needs to find how they're really going to add value. What are they going to be, you know, what part of the market can they serve that going to an Apple store, like as a video or audio professional, going to a Apple store does not help other than buying the base component. So how do you package those things together in a way that makes sense? You know, and I think that
I think TechServe was doing a pretty good job. They were doing system integration. They were really a great. They added a lot of value.
Yeah, there's a lot to what Alex is saying. Another part is that sometimes it really just
it's not enough.
Seems like it seems like you're reacting to a change in the weather that you really can't do anything about. It's not any fault of your own. If Walmart comes into your town and it's the one of those superstores that is selling groceries and vegetables, and they have a tire store and all these other sort of things. It doesn't matter that you are objectively providing better produce at competitive prices and better personalized service. People are going to see Walmart that's going to be closer to the highway.
Yep.
Yeah, there's very little you can do. It really is like nail boards over the windows. You will
Some consumers, musicians probably are rooting for the end of the death of Spotify and increasingly rooting for the success of Apple, just as probably initially authors and publishers rooted for the success of Amazon. Be careful what you wish for, though, because a shrinking ecosystem and a monoculture is not in the long run good for anybody.
Well, the other thing that's happening is that, and this happens more in video, but like companies might want to do their own services. Like they might decide that this record label is going to put out its own service because it doesn't have to pay any percentage or share any revenue with anybody. And they barely do it with artists. And then movie companies might do the same thing. You'll have to go to warnerbrothers.com to get the Warner Brothers catalog. And that'll be horrible for consumers because right now we sort of have, you know, iTunes gets us almost everything or Google Play gets us everything.
And I think the math on that is going to get harder and harder to justify. I mean, so it's one thing when people are getting, you know, a small number of dollars right now at 15 million or 30 million paid subscribers. But when you get to 100 million, 150 million, 200 million, whoever gets to that number, you know, those numbers get to be pretty big numbers, even if they're small percentages. And it becomes difficult to think that you're going to go do that on your own. Now, there's a handful of people like Peter Gabriel who sell all of his stuff, I think, pretty much directly, you know, and he doesn't really get a lot of airplay. He doesn't really get a lot of, but, you know, I'm sure he makes plenty, you know, and that's the way he likes to control it. But I think that, I think for most people that model is going to become more and more difficult as the number of subscribers grow. I mean, it's one thing when subscriptions were a small percentage of the market, but they are about to become, you know, 80% of the market. And, you know, giving those up will be very difficult to survive on or to at least really make a good living on.
So doomed.
Also, I think that's not very different from, you know, the careers in journalism these days, where it just simply there is still opportunities for success. As a matter of fact, and from some perspectives or even greater opportunities for success than there were when I started out, like a quarter, God damn it, a quarter century ago. But it's the definition of success has changed, where if I had pursued a traditional path, let's say I got started even 5 years earlier. If I were 5 years older, my idea of
you'd
success,
be Dwight Silverman and with the tech industry.
Well, my end game goal would be I'm going to be an executive editor. I'm going to be a publisher. I'm going to be an executive at the company that works for. I'm going to have a job of responsibility. I'm going to have a suite on the top floor with the ebony everything and the solid gold whatever. Now it's more like I can do my journalism and I can also. If this column is successful or if my traditional journalism is successful, I will have other opportunities to make money doing other things that support and surround that journalism as well. So it's music, I think, is going to be exactly the same way. I don't think that there are people who are growing up today who are the 14, 15, 16 years old composing music in their bedrooms that are thinking that I'm going to be making $1 million every 3 months off of album sales and concert tours. I think that their goals, they can define success as if I'm really wildly successful, I'm going to make maybe $200,000 a year, right. Which is better than living. That's if you don't get into cocaine or folk dancing, right. You can retire at age 40 because your retirement will be completely funded.
Is folk dancing a very expensive habit?
Very special shoes.
The cocaine you need for folk dancing. Yes. But it's the same in media.
How can I get Tim Cook to advise me on my music video?
Yeah. Yes. I think that's where a lot of these companies go astray. They really think that they're going to say, hey, I know how I can keep these people on board. I'll just dangle these really, really lucrative recording contracts with our publishing company, not realizing that these people don't care about that anymore. Or they'll say, we'll make you an exclusive and we'll make sure that you're available on our online store. So that's great. So, and I'll be getting all the data back on who's buying my music so I can contact them about my upcoming tours and other things. Well, no, that's proprietary. We protect the security of our customers' data. Said, well, thank you. I don't want to deal with Apple then because I would much rather have I got an email this morning I didn't notice because I was out at breakfast from Louis C.K.'s like auto mailbox saying that, oh, by the way, I'm doing a secret comedy set at the Paradise Theater in Boston.
So smart.
Tickets are only available by going to the box office physically and buying tickets. And they're available as from the moment that this email goes out. And the show is tonight at 8.
So smart.
That's stuff that he can do because he has people are buying things directly from him. Someone like Louis C.K., who has the ability to say, I don't want a deal with if Apple offered him a deal that was different from the deal that he has at FX, which is basically, I agree to make TV shows for you and you don't have anything to say about it except for that you're going to be paying me a very small amount of money. Apple might say, but Tim has some notes for you. He's Tim. Like, I don't care. Tim's not a comedian. I don't care.
This Rolling Stone article is really interesting. They point out that Apple has an exclusive with Chance the Rapper and his coloring book. You can only hear it on Apple Music because Chance has no label and is not selling downloads. They talk about Larry Jackson, who's running all of this. He was at Interscope with Jimmy Iovine. And Jackson signed Lana Del Rey and says that because Del Rey was an artist made for and by the Internet, so rather than spending money on radio, he convinced Interscope to channel all the budget into videos to appear on YouTube. And in fact, without any singles in radio rotation, her album Born to Die debuted at number 2 on Billboard and went platinum.
Well, and one of the things
you can do that now. You can do that. That's the future.
And one of the things to think about is that as music gets bigger, whether it's, you know, whatever subscription service gets really big, it really becomes the next radio, you know, and right now I think the next radio is really YouTube at the moment. But I think that a lot of us don't really listen to radio stations anymore. You just hear my kids just constantly running around calling out, you know, play, you know, whatever, yeah. You know, and that's kind of their, you know, that's their experience. They don't have any experience of, you just look at this next generation. I mean, they don't have an experience of listening to the radio.
No, in fact, one of the record executives they quote in this article says, "Apple's the MTV of this of now, right? Apple is as important to music now as MTV was in the 80s and the 90s. I think that's probably true, and YouTube maybe as well, right?
Yep.
Although YouTube is not always official music again.
Well, what's interesting, Apple funding videos is very interesting, isn't it? Do they want to become like the official place, like Vevo is for music videos? Where on is there an Apple, like apple.com/trailers? Is there a, or is it, it's on iTunes, I guess.
And I think they want to, I think over time they want to keep on having more and more exclusives on music. I mean, that's how you grow that number. So I think exclusive videos is the easy way to do that first. But being exclusive to and showing that that's got some legs and it generates revenue, I think they are doing it very slowly and very carefully. Because the other side is that, you know, obviously, I mean, I think that you can't be in the music industry and not realize what Apple could do to you at any minute. You know, and so but at the same time, you don't want to scare everybody off. I think they're happy to have a subscription service. I think the industry was trying to hold that out for a little while. So I think that Apple is going very cautiously towards that, but I think at some point they start to especially with these new bands that just aren't even making it to radio, aren't even making it to releasing CDs, I think that that's going to be a place where it gets really interesting, where Apple just starts sucking them in the way YouTube has in some ways. You know, a lot of these, whether it's Facebook or YouTube or Apple, I mean, I think all of them are really looking at how do we build the relationship with these bands before they become the next Beyonce and Taylor Swift.
I there are times where I have to be very, very clear that I'm not saying that a proposition is wrong, only that I don't understand the logic behind that proposition. I still can't figure out what Apple can tell an up-and-coming artist. I'm not talking about someone who's already has a really good career going. I'm talking about, again, the person that is 14 right now but is going to be a huge star when they're 17 or 18. I don't understand what they can offer them that would be better than exploiting whatever resources they can exploit independently.
Well, I think that you give – I mean,
ask Chance the Rapper.
But I think that providing PR, I mean, if you're a little band trying to get out there, and let's say it's not 15 million subscribers, let's say it's 100 million subscribers. At 100 million subscribers, we're gonna give you X amount of money up front, which is what the record companies do. But we're also going to, you know, maybe we make a, you know, we're going to give you this much money up front, and then we're going to promote you on the front pages. We're going to put you on One. We're going to put you on, you know, all these, there's all these other things that Apple can do for you that make it, you know, that take a lot of the risk out of you getting off the ground.
That's pretty clearly the point of Beats much, One, right?
Okay, but how many artists can they do that for?
Sorry?
Yeah, well, how many artists? Like, not thousands, obviously, but.
Well,
yeah,
I mean what if you're
not? It's always been that way, right?
You're not one of the eight lucky bands.
You always have hoped to be by Apple.
You actually. So I like. So MCA.
I'm just saying that I like the YouTube model where you're popular and successful because you have 5 million people subscribing to your channel, and every one of your pieces of music gets at least 2 million views. And nobody, you didn't have to cut a deal with anybody. You didn't have to get blessed. You didn't have to sign any contract. Say, I will give you something exclusive, and you will promote me, and you will, oh please, big corporation, help make me a success. Please help me find my audience. It's the audience finding this person. It just seems like an old fashioned.
Yeah, but ask Jack Conti of Pomplamoose how YouTube fame and stardom made him no money at all. That's why he founded Patreon. Remember, they did a tour and they lost their shirt. And I think Pamplemousse is a great band, and they did well on YouTube, but it wasn't enough for them to make a living.
And I think that the thing is that they, you know, the big advantages. I mean, the record companies have been screwing these artists for a long time. And I had a set of friends that were in Pittsburgh, and they were, you know, they put together a band, and they got signed by MCA, and then MCA, you know, paid for them to put their album out, you know, put their album together. And then MCA just got bought by somebody else who wasn't interested by Universal, who wasn't interested in releasing it, but still owned all the copyrights. And so basically they lost access to all their songs. And if you don't think that was happening, probably 1,000 bands a year were like that. You know, like just make sure that's not like an isolated thing. When I was working in the industry, there were bands that were constantly getting driven under by these record companies. And so the there are a lot of reasons why these guys, you know, don't necessarily need to be part of that little wheel. In addition to that, you know, how many songs can you actually write? at, you know, even 2 million views a pop, that's a couple thousand dollars. That's not enough. That's, you know, maybe enough to, you know, help with the, help with your parents' rent. But it's not going to be, you know, millions of views is not going, is just not enough. What you want to do is turn that millions of views into either sponsorships or people, you know, paying for something, which
to tour, into a successful tour.
You know, or into a tour, or into those types of things, or into a record, you know, contract, you know, and that's what everyone's trying to do. What if Apple becomes that record contract?
I don't think the record contract. Well, okay.
But there's how long would it take for Apple to start screwing these artists? Not as badly as MCA.
I don't think that they need to, though, because the thing is that Apple, this is a much different thing, is because Apple is, you know, I would argue that it's a different culture, where it'll be very much like it. Everyone's going to get, you know, we're going to give you this great deal to get started. Apple doesn't need to necessarily, twist every little piece of blood out of you to get it, because they just wanted to increase the number of subscribers that they had. And so what they're trying to get out of it is very different, because they're not, you know, they don't have to make money. They don't have a guy there that's got to make money from you. You know, they're playing this bigger thing, and you get this opportunity now. As a band, you still have to promote yourself. I mean, Apple's going to give you a head start because they want to make money on that, and they want to expand their service based on you. But then they can. But then you have to go out and promote yourself. You have to do all the things that you would have to do otherwise, except that every time someone watches your video, you get paid for it. You know, and you do that to some degree with YouTube when they watch your videos. But it's a lot easier to listen to, say, hey, I want to listen to this band than it is to find you on YouTube.
Artists are very confused, at least as confused as we are about what it looks like to be successful artists in this day and age.
And I do agree with Andy that I think that it's not going to be the same. We're not going to see that many more. Something is going on, and we don't know
what's going to happen.
Also with media, also with apps, almost every industry where you create content.
Yeah. Or every industry.
Yeah.
Like the razor blade industry. Think about, you know, if you were Gillette and you're looking at a company like Harry's, you got to say, what the hell?
We're being disrupted
and we don't like it. Harry's is a place where you can go and get great razor blades at half the cost of a Gillette.
What a pro.
I was trying not to call it out. I was in there like, should I say something? That was amazing. What a segue. I mean, it was like a beat-to-beat segue.
But it's not an accident, because really the people who advertise in these shows are the same people who are benefiting from this new disruptive economy, right? And you know, with the exception of Ford, all of our advertisers are people who are saying, you know, there's a new way of doing things. Why go to the drugstore and pay, you know, $8 a blade when you get it for $2 a blade from Harry's? And these are great blades. They bought the factory in Germany that makes them. High-quality, high-performance German blades are crafted by shaving experts. The flex hinge contours to your face. They got the aloe lubricating strip. Gives you a nice finish. It's a great shave. Factory direct, so half the price of the leading brands. They ship right to your doorstep. Over a million guys have made the switch to Harry's. It's a wonderful website. Go visit, because they have really started to expand their product range. They have an iOS app. See, they don't mind 30% to Apple. They're thrilled that you can, in four taps, you can set up your Harry's account and start getting those blades and get one of the great Harry kits. I use the Winston. I'm a Winston guy. A lot of people like, Steve Gibson likes a Truman. He likes the kind of more plastic handle, because it's grippy. They've got a nice new grippy finish, by the way. When you get the kit, it's very affordable. $15 for the Truman kit. You get a razor handle, three blades. You get your choice of shave cream or foaming shave gel, and it's not a sample trial size, it's a full size, and it's wonderful. And then you're set up. You subscribe. By the way, they now have a really nice face lotion that I use. I've been walking in, and of course, I'm not going to walk in with that fireball in the sky beating down on you without putting on some SPF 15 there on my face. It's non-greasy, it's lightweight, hydrates, protects, and it all comes right to your door. Remember the milkman? That was so great. The milkman came and they brought you milk, and you would have milk. This is like the milkman for razor blades. They come to your door. The only thing missing is the horse-drawn carriage and the little clink of bottles as they put them on your doorstep. Harry's, try it out. Harry's.com/MacBreak. And back. In fact, what we're going to do is we're going to give you $5 off your first purchase. $5 off your first purchase when you go to Harry's.com/MacBreak. The old is new again. The milkman is back, only this time he's bringing you razors and shave cream. Harry's! I made that up. I don't think they, I don't know if they're going to like that or not at the Harry's factory. Did he just call us milkmen?
Milk people.
Milk. I miss the milkman. Do you, any of you guys old enough to remember milkmen?
We never, I've seen it on TV, like when they bring like
I've seen it on
things.
TV.
They bring like glass bottles. Yeah. Like, I remember when they still had milk.
And they wear a white suit with a black bow tie, like the Good Humor guy in a little special hat.
See, our culture is different, Leo. We went to Perrette's and we got milk in plastic bags. And you put those plastic bags into a plastic holder.
And that, my friend, is why Canada will never be number one.
Belgium, Canada.
I mainly know that career from I guess the modern version. I've been writing about technology since you were nothing but a gleam in the razor delivery person's eye.
We had to carry our razors, Leo, in our hand across snow-covered mountains, barefoot, uphill.
I just couldn't help but think about like all of, like the 1970s porn, in which
the milkman's here
for you, Mrs. Cunningham.
Actually, you knew it was trouble for the milkman when they started selling things like milk shampoo. Mm. That was when you knew they weren't making enough money in the milk trade. They had to branch out.
Well, if you use it to make more cheese curds for your poutine.
If you want to see like one of the best music videos of all time, Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra. Dressed as milkmen, as Tommy Dorsey and his all milkman orchestra backing, I can forget her name, in a 1940s musical, a number called Milkman, Keep Those Bottles Quiet. Nancy Walker. Rhoda Morgenstern's mom. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Can't get a shy with that grade A riot.
That is hysterical.
Nancy Walker plays like a girl who works on a war production assembly line who can't sleep because the milkman keeps clinking the bottles. And so it's just these nicely dressed men in trombones and dressed as milkmen. Like,
wow.
There was a kind of nuttiness that I'd like us to tap back into that we lost.
We should bring that back. We should. It was from the show Broadway Rhythm with George Murphy. And you can get it on the sheet music for $8. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet. All right, Apple is trademarking the words night shift.
For music or for technology? I've forgotten what kind of company they are now.
Wasn't that a TV show? The Night Shift? Harry
Night Court?
And...
You're thinking about?
Yeah. Oh, Night Court. Court. That's what I'm thinking. It was a movie. Night Shift was a movie.
With
the Fonz, with
Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler.
Yeah. Yes.
Batman and the Fonz
together at last.
Show title.
It was a morgue, right? They worked in a morgue.
They were running a prostitution ring out of a morgue.
What a who pitched that idea?
And it was the 70s, Leo.
Okay, we got the Fonz, and we got this young kid named Keaton, and they're going to be running a prostitution ring out of a morgue.
Well, turns out that this Keaton guy is not the guy from Bosom Buddies. That's okay. He's still very funny.
He's still funny. Anyway, Night Shift, which is that Apple thing that makes everything orange because it's nighttime.
It shifts towards the warmer part of the spectrum at night.
Yeah. Apple apparently has filed a trademark on it.
A lot of stuff is perfunctory. I mean, anytime you come up with a branding name, your first job is to try to protect it.
Yeah. 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 And they may or may not get it. You know, there's a period of, you comment.
But if it catches on and you're the person who didn't file that trademark, boy, you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. And you got lawyers on retainer to do stuff like that. Snapchat, a little worried because adults are now using it. And they're afraid it's going to – your parents are on Snapchat, kids, and that's going to scare people away.
I feel victimized by this because Leo and I are both on Snapchat, and I feel like they're singling us out and trying to old shame us.
It's us. Michelle Obama's on Snapchat. According to the Wall Street Journal, 14% of U.S. smartphone ages – users aged 35 and above use Snapchat. That's up from 2% just 3 years ago.
It's those lenses, Leo. If you can, like, if another app let you put flowers in your hair or burn your head off, you'd be using it, but you can't.
Wall Street Journal's headline, Snapchat teen fans wince as app catches on with their folks.
Look, I've got a dog face daughter. I've got a dog face daughter. Mom, put that away.
Oh, it's so true, though.
OMG, my mom.
My mom. So what do? They go to the next thing, right? They're not going to be where where mom and dad are.
Drive them back to Friendster.
They might go back to actually writing letters and sending photographs.
With seals, with big wax seals on them.
You know, when I was a kid, I had a little sealing wax and a little
signet ring
with an L in it.
I had the Chinese one that you used to get when you got a Chinese name. And
oh, yeah. You had the block or whatever they called it.
Yeah, those were awesome.
Yeah. Apple patents a way to stop you from recording video at concerts. Who cares? I don't care.
Yeah. It's just a patent.
Just a patent.
The only thing that I care about with that is that the control aspect of that is terrifying if it actually happened, because it's not concerts that's the problem. It's political uprisings, all kinds of other things where the government could turn up
on its own.
Like that's
is it a jammer? What is it?
It's the ability to give out a signal that basically the iPhone and the operating system would
infrared signals. It's sort of like how, like, now if you try to scan a $20 bill, there is by law something in the code that says, "Oh, that's a $20 bill. I'm not going to do anything with it." And so it's a similar sort of thing. There would be a custom light array that does some sort of puts out an invisible light that would be detected by the camera sensor that would say, "Oh, I've got the a rich person doesn't want their picture taken light on, so therefore I'm not going to let this poor person take their picture." But it's just a patent, and Apple patents like a gajillion things, and God only knows how they could possibly sell this as a feature. Good news! You know how the times when you're really embarrassed when you post a picture from a concert, then later on, like the Rolling Stones emailing, say, "Gosh, that was, we really looked bad that night. We wish you hadn't taken that." You know how embarrassed and you had to apologize. We've solved the problem for you, and that your camera that you own will not be able to take a picture under any circumstances that someone who has the money for this light array would not want. They patent a million things. A lot of people are making too many column inches about. Too many think pieces about Apple run amok.
Well, no, I think that it would be frightening if it got used in the wrong way. I think that from concerts, I would love to have people not be able to pick up their phone and take pictures because it's just annoying. I mean, it has nothing to do with them, the content. Right. It's just as a user, as someone who wants to enjoy a concert, having like 80 phones taking bad pictures that they'll never look at again.
Stop them texting really in movie theaters. That's what you need that light to do.
Yeah.
Here is my
idea is like when I win the Powerball lottery for $500 million, I'm going to have I'm going to buy a movie theater. That's going to be my losing business that I will just enjoy having. And one of the reasons why it's going to be a huge success, though, is that it's going to be Wednesday night is official. We don't care. Be animals. Text. Talk loudly. Because there are people who actually want to have a living room experience where they don't care. But then Thursday night there is. You have to, gentlemen must be in, everyone, men or women must be in some form of what they consider to be formal attire. No open-toed shoes. There'll be no talking. There'll be people like there'll be ushers in uniform facing the crowd. And if we see anything out of line, guess what? The special like $5 a year pass card that you must have to actually buy a ticket for Thursday night, we will revoke it and you will not be able to buy another ticket for Thursday night. I'll have one night for people who enjoy being animals. I don't mean that as an insult. So, again, it's fun to be whatever you want to be. Thursday night for people who want, I want quiet. And I want to be with people who are going to enjoy the movie and treat it with respect. That's how you change the world.
It's the purge.
Apple has purge. Teamed up with Weezer and Trent Reznor to make an ambient soundtrack to celebrate the Juno mission that arrived in Jupiter.
And I looked out and was reaching and just fascinated.
Is that me?
What I saw.
Making that noise? And here, this is it. It's not like that. It's
very head Brussels sprouts.
There you go. This is after a 5-year journey from Earth, NASA's unmanned solar powered Juno satellite inserts itself into orbit.
Okay. Now if you sync up Dark Side of the Moon to this frame.
Apple Music presents Visions of Harmony. Is this an album? Can you buy this? Hi, I'm Jeff Goldblum.
I remember this is the trailer for Independence Day. Pretty early age, we went on some trip far away, into the mountains where there weren't many lights. And I went outside at night and I looked up.
That's Scott Bolton.
And I'd never seen
principal investigator of Juno. This is on Apple's Apple Music site.
And I looked out and was reaching and just fascinated with what I saw and wondered how it worked.
It's five-year mission.
Jupiter's so interesting is that
boldly go.
Formed, Jupiter was the first planet.
Where no probe has ever gone before.
Go back and try to understand how the planets were made. I mean, where'd the stuff that made us come from? Jupiter kind of represents that first step.
We can just remind people that it's not the one with the rings. We feel as though our work has not been for nothing.
But it is a gas giant. Am I wrong?
In a larger sense, it's really trying to understand nature, and we're part of nature.
I don't want to say.
What is
really I was told things in strict confidence.
Nature.
We have I don't want to lose access to more NASA press briefings.
I think
that's not Jupiter, but I might be wrong.
Whether it be for themselves or for others.
I remember looking
I think they're showing us his wife's sonogram.
And you're like feeling, and it's this real...
Here's Corinne Bailey-Ray. She is a musician. Uniquely equipped to dramatize this amazing mission.
It starts from trying to describe a certain emotion.
Oh, Juno! Oh, Juno!
Infinite space and how...
The planet.
Your own life and...
It's pretty, but are we learning anything?
That's a succulent. That is not.
And we're not learning anything, but is it?
That's a monkey. That's a baby.
Oh, my God. Monkeys on Saturn.
Where is Spaceship Earth? Where is Spaceship Earth?
Quinn, the musician.
I've always been fascinated by looking at space. Just understand that I'm a part of it.
I'm a part of space. We're all a part of space.
Making music was my own personal thing. It was like my diary.
And there... is a rover.
Innovation comes from
not a Juno rover.
Analytical and creative thought. Neither one can really make progress rover. Unless you've got both. Everybody's got to mix these.
Are they selling these rovers now?
The Renaissance in Florence. Galileo was this great scientist who certainly changed our culture forever.
Will I have to leave Apple Music in order to make the purchase of that rover so I don't have to...
30%.
Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, you couldn't do Juno. You couldn't even think of the idea of going and doing a mission unless you had both halves of that.
Okay.
I'd say so many of the best musicians I know have both of those things, absolutely. They can trip out and be whimsical and romantic and lost. But they also
Chance the Rapper.
Are really technical and really nerdy and really clever and organized. And, music is repetition. Music is maths. And there's so many patterns in music. And if you were to explore the theory of music, you end up at pure maths.
Anything can be put in equation form, and it's just the universe.
All right, I've had enough. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we could,
this is we stop here.
The life, it goes the on for another. The feat is so much better than that.
I know. I don't understand it, really.
I don't. It's. I don't know. That was. I don't know. It's just. I don't know.
Spent a lot of money.
It's not my jam.
How much money do you think they spent on that? You're a video production expert, Alex Lindsay.
I didn't see the whole thing, but
a lot of money.
That's $500,000 to $1 million.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably what it takes to plan it and build it. And at least that's what we charge. It might be more.
Could have gotten a deal. Go to the Pixel Core next time.
The problem is that with any of those things, it's hard to tell until you know what the creative cycle was. But if you look at those, each one of those locations is a shoot, and it's a Steadicam operator and a jib and,
lighting.
All those things and lighting and people. And I mean, every one of those shoots is $25,000 or $30,000, and it's, that kind of thing. So, I mean, for that's the interviews. For the ones that are bigger, it could be more than that.
Alex, I got $800. How much can we make fun of that video for that budget?
you could do a lot. You just play it and talk over it. It's kind of like you can do a Honey Badger version, and
I think it would just be we cut and paste that entire video, and then we smash cut to like a kid, 11th grader in a science class giving his oral report, and then the teacher just blankly saying, "You didn't do any of the reading, did you, son?"
Well, I think it's interesting.
I
think it's this attempt to take something that is not music based and then make it music based because it's in the music platform, which is the part that's the oddest part. I love the idea of producing really high quality videos about NASA. I pretty much would approve all of that forever, you know, because it's my favorite thing. But I think that it's the forced piece of tying it together with music is a little more complicated.
Spaceship Earth.
It's just not my jam, I'll just say.
Apple has released four new applications for people using iOS 10 beta with animated emojis, including this one. I can't wait to get Classic Mac.
That was in the developer seed. They've just made it an independent download now.
But you have to be using iOS 10 to use it.
Yeah. So these are examples of the sticker packs. One of the things they announced is that as part of the iMessage apps, if you don't know how to code but you're an artist, you can make stickers, and you can make them either in a painting application for static stickers, or you can make them in Apple's Motion for animated stickers. And then you just drag them into Xcode and you basically upload them, and they're available on the App Store. No coding needed. So I'm hoping, you know, fingers crossed, we're going to see amazing. I can't wait to see what, like, Icon Factory or Louis Mantia or Sebastian DeWitt or all these people do.
Most of these are repurposed from the watch, right? These are the animated.
Yeah, they made the watch ones available for cross-compatibility's sake.
But I love the new Classic Mac ones. I don't know if the hello actually spells out hello, but these are animated, right? Have you played with them?
No, I think those so far have been just static stickers. But what's cool is that you can send one, or you can drag one up and stick it on top of an existing bubble. And one of the really cool demos they did at WWDC is that messages can be collaborative. So a developer can say that each message is an individual, unique property unto itself, or they can say that they can share an ID. So then, for example, you can have stickers, and the demo they showed was an ice cream cone that then maybe me and Andy could take turns adding different scoops of flavored ice cream to.
Oh, that's cool.
Or you and Alex can have a dinner order thing going back and forth for the office, saying, I'm adding chicken to this, I'm adding steak to this, I'm adding pizza to this, and then in the end it's all bundled up and that's your order. So there's a really cool sort of collaborative opportunity in there.
Well, and I have to admit that I thought all of this was completely silly until my kids started playing with it, and they have gone haywire.
It's fun.
Haywire. Yeah. The whole, because they have their little pen, so they're drawing pictures and sending them to each other, and then that little thing that you kind of scribble and then it disappears and appears over on the other one, and it's just insane. So I was wrong.
one of the classic lessons of my years as a technology journalist is that just because I think something is silly, that doesn't mean I'm done thinking about this. It means you.
I was just watching it, and I cannot believe they used this much of the keynote on these stupid little things. That I mean, and I enjoy
people.
It got the biggest applause in the house because for that announcement.
Yeah.
Because it shows, again, it's natural for large companies, and name any, not just Apple, but name any large companies. You have to have a company like Snapchat that does, willing to do, in the most positive way, just heroically, gloriously stupid things. Just for no other reason than somebody at that company thinks it's a cool idea. And then it takes off like wildfire, and that points the way to Google and to Apple and to Facebook to say, okay, we would not have come up with this our own self. We would not never necessarily have devoted 10 minutes of a keynote to stickers, but people love the stickers, and so we have to give them what they want. If people are using...
one of the big aha moments we had earlier in the year is when the Kimoji app came out. And, you know, most of the existing people we had were like, oh, this is really dumb. We're just going to ignore it. And then, you know, my boss, Kevin, credit to him, said, no, this is amazing. Cover it. And it was incredibly popular. And we've since gone and hired Micah Sargent, formerly of Newsy, to just sort of do what we're calling iMorePop, because there's a whole bunch of people for whom this is the most important stuff on the platform. And just because it's not stuff that we would traditionally think of as important, we're just wrong but we have our taste, but there's millions, if not hundreds of millions of people with very different tastes, and it's our job to sort of serve all of them. And iMessage remains the most popular app on iOS, and when they just made three times the size emoji, Craig joked about that on the talk show, that was the biggest pop of the night, because people want to communicate. We're intrinsically lonely, and we want to talk to other people, and if we can make that fun and we can de-stress it, stickers are less stressful than having to write to somebody, because you can be late and you could say, oh honey, I'm sorry I'm late, and you'll get in trouble, where you could send a banana peel slipping emoji and it'll be like, haha, hurry up. All these things are really valuable to us.
And it does get a lot of fun. Someone sent me a picture of a picture of, you know, the fireworks and said Happy 4th of July, and I have like Giphy, I think, or something.
Yes.
Yeah, a Giphy, keyboard. Yeah. And I posted, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, with the little martini, with the little stuff going behind him. And it was a lot more fun than just saying happy.
I love him. Of course, Apple's late to the game on this. Facebook Messenger's been doing it for a while. Telegram, a lot of a lot of other apps, but it's nice. Yeah, it's fun.
When you own the platform, you're only ever one announcement away from taking back market share.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. new month means new videos of the Apple campus. It's coming along. Let's get up in the drone and see how the campus is coming.
It needs Game of Thrones music, Leo.
This month. It's really looking like it's all, you know, like a building.
Yep.
There's the R&D facility. In its own.
It must be terrible to be at the campus, but not in that building.
So close, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's just across the road. Yeah.
Are you in the donut? Are you in the donut? No, I'm across. Yeah. It's like being in the office with the OEOB at the White House. You're like, I work at the White House.
Look at that. 100,000 square foot fitness center just for employees. Wow.
Jay Blonick is building it by hand. It's a heck of a workout.
Entirely of Lego.
Yes.
It's the reason why you can't get a single gray Lego block. It's all being used for that structure. Yeah, I wonder if he's like now making plans that I've got to find a way that at night to land some of these drones inside the building so that when they top it off and seal it up, I can still make flights of the hallway to find out what's going on as they build out these offices.
Solar panels on the parking structure, 95% complete. Lots of solar panels. Look at those.
These are really interesting buildings.
You can turn the music down. I can do without that. 11,000 vehicle parking, solar panels, 16 megawatts of power on a sunny day.
How close does that get to the entire use of the building, I guess, is the question.
Yeah.
Didn't they say their goal is to make it completely self-sufficient? Yeah. I don't know whether that meant they're going to be buying credits from elsewhere, but I think that one of the long-term goals was to make sure that Apple's putting more power into the grid than they're taking back from it.
Fuel cells will be used as well for additional 4 megawatts.
Ooh, just like that Bond movie.
3,000 glass panels will be used.
Yeah.
What do we say that those cost? They were some $150,000 each, something like that. No, that can't be right.
Very expensive. But also look at those awnings. I was talking casually to an architect about curved buildings like this, and he said that it's hard to build these things without really good modeling because the sun, if you get the math wrong, the sun hits it at the wrong angle at the wrong time of the year, and suddenly someone who is across the campus, that things are literally catching on fire because they put something paper in the window.
I talked to somebody who was actually on site in the doing some work there as a construction person, who says they've been having horrific problems with heat expansion, unplanned heat expansion issues, and
It's glass, so you have to do something with that heat. A lot of these buildings, again, from that same conversation, it's actually planned so that it can gather heat but then put that heat to good use elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So it sounded like he was talking about designing a circuit board where a lot of it was just managing what you're going to do with the heat that this thing is going to generate. And a lot of the stuff like installing literally heat sinks throughout a building is one of the solutions to this. But there's so many great questions you would like to ask. Apple secrecy internal is also very good. So what is there to make sure that people who are not supposed to know about certain projects don't crosstalk?
What is this?
Get to see things?
What are we looking at here?
Minecraft, Leo.
It looks like Minecraft. So I guess this is foam.
It's insulation.
Yeah.
Insulation foam covering the tunnel to the underground parking facility.
Yeah.
It says tunnels will be covered with dirt and foam. That's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of natural cooling that's happening there. If you keep that coolness inside and prevent heat from the sun from getting down there, you save a lot of money. A lot of the power is not just power generation, but saving power by thinking of this as a hermetically sealed unit, almost like a biodome. That this is a functioning organism, right. Organism that's going to be breathing in and breathing out. And it's going to sweat and it's going to be generating heat and need to cool down. And how do you actually move all that energy and not waste it?
So that is from Matthew Roberts. There's I guess two guys now. I'm surprised there's not kind of like a like some sort of traffic jam of drones over the Apple.
I'm surprised that one of these videos doesn't end with like suddenly this expanding net appears from a dot somewhere from a van
or Ed 209. Just as Ed 209 comes out.
Yeah. Anyway. At this point, we're talking early next year, although I'm still wondering if they hurried along on the theater. And I'm still wondering if maybe we won't see the first Apple event in the theater this year. I don't know. It still looks pretty messy.
It's possible to have it. They have to get an occupancy permit. If they're going to be putting more than X number of people inside a structure, they can't just simply decide that, okay, we think this is okay. They have to have people sign off on that.
Yeah.
However, it's possible to get sort of I'm about to talk above my level of understanding, but it would be possible for them to get it up to a certain standard that allows them to host and get a permit for a one-time event inside there. The question is, would they want to bring people into a building that is unfinished? But I do believe that they're really accelerating the research lab and the auditorium because there's a lot of early bang that's going to be generated right from both those places.
Well, I'm sure all of you will get invited to the first event there, and it'll be a very exciting thing, and it'll be just me on the outside pressing my nose to that curved glass going, oh, wow, wish I could get in. But you guys will enjoy
that. I wonder where it is on the pay grade of Apple employees, the squeegee team.
Leo's nose prints again. Yeah. Again with the nose.
You think
prints
about that. There's gonna be a squeegee team of like 10 people, and that's all they do all day.
Yeah, it's like the Golden Gate Bridge, right? They just keep going in circles.
Because it's all connected and curved, you could just hold the squeegee out and be on like some sort of pulley and just go zzz all the way around. Easy.
There'll also be like two times weekly passive aggressive memos from maintenance saying, we have explained to all of you hires that suction cup darts are not to be used inside office buildings. It's fun to you, but we have to have people out there removing the darts when you are done with your playtime.
It does. It is. Remember, the 10th anniversary of the iPhone announcement is January, right?
Yep.
And the release is June, so it is kind of it would be a momentous occasion to kind of have at the
iPhone 10.
Also, a lot of stuff is going to be finished there in early 2017.
Right.
So I've no idea, but I would be really surprised if they didn't take advantage of that and saying we are having a huge 10th anniversary blowout.
Right.
All the hummus and grass water that you can drink.
We'll take a break and get your picks, gentlemen, in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. I really shouldn't even say the Ring Video Doorbell now because they have a number of products in the Ring family giving you, in fact, the Ring of Security bundle or the Pro bundle. We've talked before about the Ring Video Doorbell. I love our Ring Video Doorbell. I know when people come and go, I can say to my daughter, I don't have to do this anymore, but I could have said to my daughter, I see you came home late, and who was that you brought with you at 3 in the morning? Because I have video of it's got motion detector in it, it's high-def video. When the doorbell rings, I can answer it, not even from home, but from here, from anywhere around the world because of the internet. They've got apps for the iPhone and Android devices, and they have a Mac app too now, which is really nice. So you could actually get on your Mac and see all the motion that's been going on with your Ring Video Doorbell. Now they have the Ring Video Doorbell Pro, 1080p HD video, night vision, and because it is hard, it's designed for hardwired doorbell replacement, they don't use a battery on this, so it's a lot smaller. That's nice. That's the Ring Video Doorbell Pro. The kit, the Ring of Security kit, comes with the wireless weatherproof HD stick-up cam. So you've got your doorbell looking at the front door, but maybe you got the stick-up cam around back. You can also hear and speak to visitors with two-way talk using that. And with the optional cloud video recording, you can easily capture and share video with family and friends or, you know, law enforcement should the need arise. Then they get with the kit, you get the chime, which plugs in any standard power outlet to know when your doorbell is ringing. I never hear my regular chime, so having a second chime and around back is very handy. The Ring of Security bundle or the Pro bundle, $50 off. Just go to ring.com/MacBreak. They're the kits. ring.com/MacBreak, $50 off just because you're listening. Monitoring of your whole home now, thanks to Ring. They've really got a great family of products. I love our Ring Video Doorbell. I couldn't live without it now. And I think with these new products, they've really got a great offering. Ring.com/MacBreak to save $50 off your new Ring kit. Time, ladies and gentlemen, for our picks of the week. Alex Lindsay, I always end with you this time. Let's start with you.
So I have an odd one. It was actually based on watching my wife actually use. My wife loves calligraphy, and got her the big iPad, and she really wanted to put something on it that did calligraphy. And this calligraphy handbook she just loves, and so I thought I'd make it the pick for the week. It is a you can get it on for the iPad, and basically what it does is it really gives you a way to it works really well with the pen or pencil. And, it gives you a real guide on exactly how to, write these and a lot of instruction on how to put it together. And there's a couple of products all made by this one fellow who, looking by the name, my guess is that he's from Vietnam.
Nguyen Tan Hon Hu.
Yeah. But I think that he's got a couple different ones on this, but this is the one that she's spending most of her time on. And she just really enjoyed it. I mean, she just spent my wife has not been a big fan of or a big convert to the iPad until she started really playing with this and a pencil. So there's a lot of tools there that really, let you kind of play with that and, kind of learn how to, how to do that and work with angles and so on and so forth.
Anyway, what a good idea for the use of the pencil in the Pro. That's really cool.
And I think that more than anything else, I think these are the kind of apps you just really get sometimes when you look at an app like, wow, people could learn. You can really learn how to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
iPad. So when it's well built, So anyway, it's pretty nifty.
Very cool. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I had the good fortune of going to the accessibility meetup at WWDC, and one of the developers I met there makes the ASL app, the American Sign Language app for the iPhone. Now, it's not an app meant to teach people who need sign language. It's an app meant to teach other people sign language. It's like an introduction, and it has like basic vocabulary, but it's really meant for people who have hearing but are curious or interested or just want to learn more about American Sign Language to sort of get that introduction and learn that basic vocabulary and sort of open up that world so they can better understand it. I downloaded it. I'd show it to you, but I'm busy updating my phone and it's taking forever. But you can download it and you can get started with it. It's really approachable. They've really taken great pains to make it, forgive me for saying this, but accessible to people who don't need it for accessibility, if that makes any sense. I've always been fascinated about this. I've always looked at people who are doing sign language, and you go to conferences sometimes and they have somebody who's doing sign language on the side. That was especially prevalent before you could do real-time subtitles. And it's still used a lot with live speakers at venues. And it's incredibly fascinating. And it gives you an appreciation for it, but it also gives you a little bit of understanding of it. And I think it's something that all of us could use more of.
What a great idea.
Yeah, it's tremendous.
Oh, I love this. I've always wanted to learn ASL.
Same.
And there's a lot of evidence, by the way, that kids who learn ASL, hearing or not, their brain develops in a unique way. It's a language, and it's very valuable. Wow, that's
really good. Same way learning to code. It opens you up to many new ways of thinking, which is amazing.
The other cool thing about ASL is that it's the one truly international language.
Yeah. And it's a true language. It's not
right. Exactly.
It's not letter spelling. It's a full expressive language of its own. Wow, this is really cool. Thank you. Really cool. Yeah. I got two apps I got to download. Andy, what can you do for me?
I can give you a free app to download.
Okay.
just today, this is fresh off the wire. BB Edit 11.6 just got released with piles and piles of features that you would have to be a professional developer to truly understand and explain.
Love BB Edit.
You've heard us talk about BB Edit over and over again. It's just even if you're not a coder, if you're just a writer, or if you just need to bash text, it is the consummate tool for editing text. One of the highlights, though, for people like me is that they've decided that for a long time, Barebones has had a free product called Text Wrangler, which is sort of a simplified text editor, and then the commercial BB Edit. What they've done, they've made a substantial change where now if you download BB Edit 11.6, you will get the full version of BB Edit. It'll be fully operational for 30 days. After 30 days, it will still function, but some of the totally diesel heavy duty apps, heavy duty features that would be like for web development and stuff like that. They're grayed out and said, you know, this is a demo feature. And that version of the app will keep running forever, keep opening all your files forever. It's not like limited in opening, saving, and editing files. But if at any point you decide you want to pay $40 for a license, if you were never using that app before, then that same copy will just then be unlocked, and all those things that were gray are gonna be lit up again. And there's less money for it. if you're a previous customer of BB Edit 11, the upgrade is free. If you have and the upgrades can be less expensive depending on what version you have. But that's a really neat way of not necessarily making something demo-ware, but saying we're not gonna make our app stop working after 30 days. We're just going to take away the features for which we deserve money for all of this, but here are the features that you can use to make lots of money with this app, and we're just going to hope that you're going to give us, we're going to agree that these extra features are worth money.
That is really great. So are they discontinuing Text Wrangler, or is just if you download the demo, you can use this forever?
Text Wrangler is still available. You can still download it off of the site. It is natural to wonder what the future of Text Wrangler will be, but I can say that the BB Edit 11.6 is live. I just went to the site and I was just able to download Text Wrangler as well.
Yeah.
I've been using the betas, and I don't, again, if you have the demo version of BB Edit, I think you'll be happy with that and you don't necessarily need Text Wrangler.
Rich Siegel, who's been on the show, used to do it that way. I seem to remember. And then he introduced Text Wrangler. He's gone back and forth on the idea of a free editor.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you have a small company that's run by just two or three people. You can have a lot of, instead of something being the result of 6 months of meetings, then three right. months of consultants right. doing A/B testing, it's more like people leaning back over whiskey and thinking, what would we like to do? What makes sense for us? How do we achieve outreach to new customers in the best way? And so they will try this. And if it doesn't work out, they'll try something else. But it's always done with a lot of thought and a lot of belief. These are the people who birthed this app and have been raising it and cultivating it for years and years and years. So it's not an app that gets bought by Morton Thiokol and then it becomes something else entirely.
No, and I don't think it ever will. And I like that. I think this is Rich's this is his life journey. And
use it every day. It's amazing. Yeah,
really amazing. Yep. Amazing product. It's actually, for some people, a reason to get a Mac. It's that good.
It's an example of just, it's rare that, in my opinion, he is a very close friend, so I have to say that. But realize that he became a friend after I was on the MailSmith, another late BB Edit Bare Bones product. I was on the alpha and the beta list for that, and we became friends after me complaining about MailSmith and saying it should work this way, not that way. Then we wound up going out for lunch and a friendship.
So you killed MailSmith, you son of a.
I didn't kill MailSmith. I just simply said, MailSmith, walk towards the light. All are welcome.
I don't know why. I Apple ships a very credible email program with OS X, and there probably isn't really a reason for anything else. But I nevertheless continue to download and try and look for a better email program.
That's good.
And I loved MailSmith. I thought it was very good. I currently use MailMate, which is a kind of a old-fashioned feeling power tool.
Does it work like Eudora? If it doesn't work like Eudora, Leo, can't use it.
You know, I was going to say, if you miss Eudora, you will feel right at home with MailMate.
And Thunderbird or Bust.
All you have to do is look at the MailMate website to realize, oh, yeah. But what it does is it handles IMAP really well, and that's kind of key to me. And the other key that it absolutely has to have, which Apple's Mail does, is support for PGP. Email encryption, or I use GNU Privacy Guard, and most Mac people do, and it does support it quite well. It's a really nice email client.
I have to say that I've been liking the direction that Mail.app has been taking.
Mail's good.
I don't think it ever stank, but it looked like for a couple of years it looked like an unloved piece of software. Like the person who the people at Apple who really wanted it to excel had moved on to other things or moved on to other companies, and it was sort of looking for a new sponsor, so to speak. But every new iteration that's come out has had a nice little tweak and a nice little bit of simplicity. It's a lot more stable than it used to be.
It works with Gmail now, which was really the reason I started looking at other email programs.
Yeah, and that's smart people on Mail now.
Right. And that in itself is laudable because the fact that you yourself can mention that IMAP support has done well on a certain app.
Right.
IMAP is so crazy with all the different dialects that every person who creates a new mail system based on IMAP decides that, you know what, but I'm going to be the one who finally fixes IMAP for good. And it's going to be standard IMAP. IMAP will just be better, except for the mail apps that break when they try to interface with this and the people who can't log in. And so the fact that they got it working reliably with the Gmail, which is its own quirk with a capital K.
It's not a really standard IMAP. That's why, you know. It's,
yeah, exactly. It's and that shows the amount of work that goes into it. Yeah. I think that I'm very, very – I'm actually kind of keen to see what happens to it the next 2 or 3 years because they also seem to be learning a lot from the iPad. There are a lot of things in the new version of macOS where you can really see that they looked at there are a lot of people at Apple who are now using iPads, I think, as their primary computing device. And after time, when they're forced to go back to their office and their cubbies and use their Macs, like, gee, I really wish I could do picture in picture like I can on my iPad. Or I really wish that Mail worked the way that it could on my iPad. I'm seeing a lot of cool stuff that I really like.
And as long as I'm mentioning GPG, the GPG tools for Macintosh just came out with its first stable release for El Capitan, just in time for Sierra. It takes them a little while, but you know what? It's free, and it's a great tool. And if you do want to have encrypted email, this is the standard way to do it. They have voiceover support now, which is nice. Download the GPG suite from gpgtools.org. And it came out yesterday on the 4th of July because it's all about freedom. So there.
And apple pie.
And apple pie. Ladies and gentlemen, we've concluded another great episode of Mac Break Weekly. And I thank you all for being here. Alex Lindsay, the Pixel Core. Follow him on the Twitter at Alex Lindsay with an A-S-A-Y. What did Alex Lind say? That's how I remember it.
There you go.
Thank you for being here.
My name to Lind, and then I'll just say a lot of things.
Yeah. Anything you want to plug you got coming up? Or
there's nothing that I'm doing that I can plug.
That's a plug in and of itself, isn't it?
In a way, that's the most impressive plug at all.
I'd plug it, but I can't.
I'll be off for a couple of weeks working on some stuff. So
okay, good.
Anyway, but
we'll see you in a few weeks.
That's great. You'll be on Jupiter. No big deal.
Yeah.
Well, you know, can't talk about that.
Yeah. Hey, somebody's got to do the stream.
Yeah.
From Montreal, as always, at imore.com, it's the great Rene Ritchie. Love having you on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, it should be out either tomorrow or the next day, but we had a really good interview with Linda Dong, who worked on the Apple Pencil, and Leo Napolitano, who worked on Siri for CarPlay and Apple TV on Debug. So that'll be in the next episode.
Great.
Yeah, they're both brilliant, brilliant people.
Great. Debug is one of the many podcasts from the iMore gang, but a must listen always. If you go to imore.com and go to the hamburger menu and click podcasts,
we'll find it. Yeah.
You'll find it. It's right there with the hamburgers. Andy Inako writes for the Chicago Sun-Times and joins us every week. He also does Inako's Almanac and Material, other podcasts on other networks. And anything you want to plug, sir?
Nothing particular. Unfortunately, okay. I'm the opposite of Alex, and I can talk about everything, but nothing I'm doing this week is particularly interesting.
Great.
He's only on Mars, and since Jupiter's in hotness,
I will only say that I bought this really cool, like, electric smoker on a typewriter.
Wow. That's
about the spec. Awesome. You could kill a man. I'm about to kill myself if I drop this on.
What are you going to do with that? iPad over Bluetooth?
I have a specific project that I'm working that I've bought this for, but I have to take it to the world famous Cambridge typewriter in Arlington, Massachusetts. And have it looked at because there are a couple of things that are kind of wrong with it. But
isn't that nice that you still have a typewriter store repair shop in
Oh, these guys, that shop is legendary. It's wow. become, it's not just like one of the few places that repairs typewriters, but this shop just repairs everything. And he has a really great, they have a great typewriter blog that, of course, is written on typewriters that have been brought into the shop. And he'll show, and he'll just like, every time there's like an interesting typewriter comes in for repair, he'll like write about it. And he's taken stuff that's been like dragged from the bottom of a lake and used in a crime investigation and got it working back into pristine, beautiful condition.
Look at this.
So I'm looking for he's repaired one of my typewriters before, and this is going to be like an actual production piece of hardware for, again, a project that I can't talk about yet, but hey, I do have something I can't talk about. All right,
yay. You found it.
But yeah, this one has to actually work and has to be able to keep up with my typing. So I'm also, the cord is kind of, it's kind of blazy, kind of fiery, kind of
insurance-like. I saw the plug connectors in the back that looked like somebody had puttied them in. I don't know. I think it's a little worrisome. Look at that Russian keyboard. Wow.
He repairs all of them. As a matter of fact, I bought this model on his advice. I know a guy for typewriters. And like, this is the Smith Corona Electra 210. These things that are, again, they're just made like, they're made out of steel and iron hearts. So there's nothing you can't fix with those.
I have fond memory of my last typewriter, which was a very fancy typewriter. It was like, I wish I could remember. It wasn't electric, my last manual typewriter. But I remember it was like, this is like the king of typewriters.
Yeah, I have a manual typewriter that I bought at a flea market because it's like actually like a 1942 like Smith Corona, like super portable. But the thing is, it's for me actually writing on it, it's a little bit twee. It's like I have to focus on slowing down, whereas on this keyboard I used to type when I was a little kid before our family got an Apple computer. This model typewriter is the one that I wrote like my first published story on.
Oh, that's neat. No wonder. So it has a little special
with me.
Yeah, mine was an Hermes. Can't remember what model it was, but these were considered to be the like the king of the, you know, if you could get a great typewriter. It was not the same Hermes. These are Hermes. But I wish I could. I wonder what happened to that. God, I'd love to have that again.
I'm sure my guy could set you up with one of those things.
Really?
Once or twice a year, the shop has, I think they call them type-ins, in which it's an open house, and they just set up like dozens and dozens of typewriters like on the sidewalk and everywhere, inviting people to have cake and punch and type. And they're typing speed contests. And it's quite a festival, man.
Wow.
We played with ones when I was a kid, but I think my first reports were still, they went from handwritten to my teacher. I remember my teacher asking, what typewriter did you use this for? And I was like, it's called a dot matrix printer.
Oh, no. I went through college with a manual typewriter.
Well, that's the end of the show. We need to go. But my teacher thought that I was making an excuse for not finishing my essay assignment when I came up to him in class and said, I'm sorry, it's finished, but my printer at home is broken. I have it on this floppy. I can print it for you when I get to the computer lab like this afternoon. And he said, Mr. Inotko, why don't I have an Apple computer at home. Why don't I just take that disk and see what's on it? And the next day he was like, very, very pleased with me for actually not having lied about my homework, but also say, you know, that I was so excited. It's the first time I've actually accepted an assignment on a floppy disk. Oh, I wrote a piece for the Boston Globe about it.
Funny.
Nice.
That's awesome. You know, you can get vintage Hermes. The problem is we don't have Cambridge typewriter out here. You can
road
get
trip. Next time you come to New England, let's do a road trip.
I might.
Also that's near. It's on the Red Line. It's like near Somerville. There's a good barbecue near there. There's stuff to do.
And I think you would enjoy it.
I think you would even, like, if you had a video recorder, you would record something with this person because it's.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
I have to go see my mom at some point. It might be a short road trip, but that's close enough that I'll stop. I'll be in Cranston. I'll come on over. We'll go to Cambridge Typewriter. might even pick up an Hermes.
You can even come to my favorite diner with me.
Oh, sold. Deal. Sold. They're only about $150. It's kind of sad on eBay.
I will say, if anybody is tempted after hearing this to go on eBay, I should tell you that there are two things that are guaranteed when you buy a typewriter like this on eBay. They'll be super, super cheap, and that's good, but they're guaranteed to get broken during shipping. Right. I don't mean that they'll be like in pieces. I mean that it'll be perfectly functional when the person packs it up very nicely. When you get it, a key will not work or a platen will not work. So that's why I would not have bought one on eBay had I not had a guy.
No, Cambridge typewriter. Yep. That's why I'm not buying one. They're Swiss, you know. And can you get the ribbons?
Yep, ribbons are easy to get. These are standard ribbons. As a matter of fact,
I mean, somebody still makes typewriter ribbons?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's easy. It's just like cloth impregnated with soaked in.
No, I understand the technology, but why bother?
because it's like there are people who still use these. It's not. Yeah. It's no longer something that you can sell in bulk to every single corner drugstore. But they are things that if you keep manufacturing them and put them on Amazon, you know, people are going to seek you out because where else are they going to go for them?
You know what's sad is that if I got one of these. In my memory, it's pristine. It's brand new. It's wonderful. Yeah. And then you get it and you realize, good God, that was 50 years ago. And these things are beat up now.
Again, right. Talk to my guy. He also acquires typewriters for sale because now it's very, very hip, like for weddings to like buy a typewriter to type invitations on. People buy them for their kids for Christmas. So he can probably, when you're there, he will be able to show you what looks like a brand new, completely reconditioned model that you will then carry home lovingly
as you carry. Well, and you still can't address envelopes worth a damn on a computer.
The thing that I actually use like my manual typewriter for is that there are times where I want to write a letter, like when I've written a letter to my congressman, when I wrote a letter of complaint to someone else, it's like nothing says that.
Nothing says crank person, quite like.
Maybe that too. it's the content that says crank, I like to think. But it's like, okay, this was definitely not printed up. This is not something, a PDF that someone downloaded, and now I'm the thousandth person to.
That's true. You hand entered it.
It gets your attention.
To your typewriting machine.
Also, people think that I'm 83 years old and I have nothing to do all day except for write letters to people.
Nothing says crank quite like a typewritten letter. Thank you, Andy.
It's Sparrowhead decided. Wearing a firefighter hat.
Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate it. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you can't join us live on the stream and join us in the chat room or be in studio, we love it when you're in studio. I got some nice members of our studio audience today, all of whom look old enough to remember typewriters. Yep. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that, well, just to get your on-demand audio or video, you could download that using your computing machine from twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated for distribution via the internet. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. That's not how I say it. I say break time is over. Now get back to work. Break time is over. Over. It's break. It's over. It's over.